Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here until 5 a.m. It is a Wednesday morning. That means Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? And that means any artist, any song, anything. So, yeah, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a couple of minutes here, we're going to have David Holcomb and Adam Blaskowitz from Soft Cage Films. And they are it's a nonprofit that got together to empower filmmakers. It was founded in 2012. And they are offering a introduction to filmmaking from script to screen children's film class. And it's for kids between the ages of 8 and 11, grades 3 to 5. It takes place at Hairpin Arts Center on Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. It starts, it's 8 weeks long. It starts October 2nd, runs through November 20th, and it's on Wednesdays from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And they offer that class, and we'll give you all the details on that and all the details about their company and the movies that they make. They generate a lot of film. They make a lot of movies. A lot of people are there as part of Soft Cage Films. You can also check out softcagefilms.com, and we'll have a link up on our Facebook page. That's David and Adam. They'll be joining us. It's really cool. They're offering an introduction to filmmaking class for kids between 8 and 11. That's really awesome. So we'll talk about that and more right here on WGN. Hey, today in history, Kelly Clarkson wins first American Idol. We're all very excited about that. It was a life-changing moment for everybody. So we'll talk a little bit about that, American Idol, and the best reality TV shows and the worst reality TV shows of all time. We'll talk about some odd jobs that no longer exist and some bands from the 80s that are still playing today. So we'll get to some of those topics and more. We still got the Guinness, the craziest and weirdest Guinness World Book of Records that we want to get to, and maybe we'll jump into that. Also, Know Your Onion. It's Wednesday morning, which means you need to know your onion. We'll play around with two different contestants. They'll each play alone, and what happens is Tom is your host, and he will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's a real news headline or from The Onion, and The Onion being the fake news newspaper that writes satirical comedy news. So you just have to decide whether that news headline is either real or The Onion. And as we say every week when we play this game, the real news in the real world just keeps getting weirder and wilder and crazier and insane. Sometimes it's very difficult to tell the difference between real stuff and The Onion. So Know Your Onion later on in the show. In fact, that's after the 4:30 news. So that's what's coming up on the show. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and you can stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also, subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of every show is podcast and available usually a few hours after our show ends in the morning. So it's easy to subscribe. It's also free. You can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Look up the Nick D Show. Subscribe to the podcast. It's free. It'll be automatically sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is. That's what's coming up on the show. Please stick around. We're going to have a lot of fun this morning on this Wildcard Wednesday. And again, get your Wildcard Wednesday. Your Wildcard Wednesday requests in. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. All right. Let's say hello to my producer, The great Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
All right, man. How are you?
Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all.
All right. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
I like your shirt.
Yeah. This is great. This is actually from a local company here in Chicago called Creepy Co.
Creepy Co.
Yeah. They do a lot of really cool horror themed stuff. Like you can get, I think you're going to buy this when you see it. You can get an entire big blanket that is modeled after the VHS box
of
Halloween.
I've seen it.
Yeah. And they were at Flashback.
Yeah.
And, they're really, really cool. I love all their stuff.
That blanket is amazing.
Yeah, I also got from them a cool patch that's now on my jacket that says, "Sorry, we're dead." So I'm feeling it, you know.
Yeah,
October's around the corner.
I know, man. I know. It's weird that I now have a producer who has more horror T-shirts than I do. Just as many or more.
I don't know. If we were to go shirt to shirt, I feel like you'd probably beat me out. But I want to see if I can gain.
No, you got it. And that's a. By the way, the shirt is a button down shirt. It's kind of a Hawaiian. It looks like kind of a horror Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, they specialize in this sort of thing.
Yeah. It's and, pretty cool.
Yeah, you can see the puzzle box from Hellraiser's on there, the They Live glasses, a bunch of fun horror-themed stuff.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, that's Tom. He's producing. And by the way, you know these Soft Cage film guys, right?
Yeah, we go back quite a bit.
They've been on your show.
Yeah.
On your podcast.
They were one of my first guests when I discovered them. Early on when we were building the podcast, and they've been great friends ever since. And
by the way, do you have a new podcast up?
Yeah, we'll have one coming up a little bit later this morning.
Okay, so Wednesday morning.
Yeah, and we'll be talking to the folks from Filmscape, which is a great kind of trade expo for people who want to get into the film industry, learn about the different techniques and technologies behind actually making movies.
Oh, and that's No Coast Cinema is the name of the is the name of the podcast that Tom co-hosts. And give your partner there a plug.
Yeah, Connor Cornelius, the great Corn.
The Corn. Not Cornholio.
No, I wish. He'd be a great co-host.
Are you threatening me? Still one of the greatest characters in the history of animation. All right, well, everybody check that out. Go to WGNRadio.com and WGN Radio Plus and all that cool stuff to check out our podcast and check out Tom's No Coast Cinema podcast. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic Vaughn.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, pal?
Doing very well. Doing very well. Listening to you guys discuss the podcast. I love his podcast. I just kind of stumbled across it lately. But I was wondering how Connor's Cornholio impression is, because maybe for a future episode.
he should do one, right?
You know what? I will specifically send him this request.
I need TP for my bunghole.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I'll get him to do it. Maybe we'll do a Halloween special and we'll do it in character.
Oh, he also has to pull the shirt up on top of his head.
Yeah, he'll be willing to do that.
He's got to, and it's got to be an AC/DC shirt.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, he had AC/DC and Beavis had Metallica.
Yep.
And then what's the kid's name who wore the Winger shirt?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Why am I blanking on it? It's been such a long time since I saw it, but it's so perfect that kid was wearing a Winger shirt. Man, I miss Beavis and Butthead. That was just genius. That show was genius. Ugh.
Oh, is their dork neighbor, Stuart?
Stuart, right. It's Stuart.
Because here's a great headline from 2014. Kip Winger has forgiven Beavis and Butthead.
No, that show was great, man. And I've told this before. When I was living in the Honeybee Complex, at the famous Honeybee Complex, we had a whole bunch of guys over. We had a whole bunch of our friends over, and we watched an eight-hour marathon of Beavis and Butthead. Imagine that. Imagine watching 8 hours of Beavis and Butthead. They called it the Maranathon. MTV did the Maranathon, and we got a bunch of beer, and we ordered pizza, and we just sat on the couch, and we watched 8 hours of Beavis and Butthead. Vic, you can imagine what our brains were like after a couple of hours.
I was thinking, you must have been just speaking in little bits of knowledge from Beavis and Butthead days.
You became Beavis and Butthead. We all were just sitting on the couch going, but Stuart. Yeah. The Maranathon, one of my favorite things ever.
It's
8 hours of Beavis and Butthead. We did it too, man.
Yeah,
we did it. We watched all 8 hours. We were drunk and stupid by the end. Well, that we were beforehand too.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, all right. Well, Beavis and Butthead is not around anymore, but we miss Stewart and his winger t-shirt. Are you threatening me? You have to get him to do that.
I will do my absolute best. There's probably going to be some cash involved, but he'll do it.
It'll be worth it, man. All right. Well, okay, let's take a break here. And we'll come back and we'll talk with David and Adam from Soft Cage Films about their company and about their introduction to filmmaking class for kids. And that's coming up right after we break here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Today in history, Kelly Clarkson wins the first American Idol. So we'll talk about that and some of the best and worst reality shows of all time and much more here on 720 WGN. So... by the way, you know what we didn't, I don't know if we asked, Tom, if, when She's Crafty was in, we didn't ask him if they played that song, considering that's an instrumental.
Oh, Groove Holmes?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have a feeling that they probably dip into a little bit of the instrumentals.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. But I was just thinking to myself, first thing that popped in my head when it came on was, I wonder if She's Crafty plays. She's Crafty, by the way, is the all-female, Beastie Boys tribute band.
Amazing tribute
band. And they're awesome. But I wasn't sure if they played that one or not.
Next time they come around, I'll be like, all right, do you guys do the instrumentals?
Right, exactly. All right, well, anyway, welcome back, everybody. We're here, and we want to tell you about this company called Soft Cage Films, and they're providing classes now. There's an introduction to filmmaking class from script to screen. It's a children's film class, and it's for 8 through 11-year-olds, grades 3 through 5. And the location is at Hairpin Arts Center, which is on Milwaukee Avenue. And we'll tell you all about the details on it. We also want to tell you about this really cool company. And let me welcome to the show, into the studio here, David Holcomb. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And Adam Blaskowitz, right?
Correct.
Okay. See, I got it right. Yeah. So welcome, you guys. I understand that you have been on my producer Tom's podcast.
Yes,
yeah.
I think we were one of the earliest guests, and we've tried to be regulars. We love it.
Yeah, he's great, man. So tell us about, well, first of all, tell us about yourself, David. You're a filmmaker.
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker. I edit, direct, produce, write pretty much everything.
Yeah.
So we've been working together for about, Adam and I, for about 10 years, and then we formed this company in 2012.
How did you guys meet?
Actually,
through a mutual friend?
Yeah,
right?
Mutual friend, I think karaoke. It was the first time I actually met Dave. But
and
I
we
didn't...
both hate karaoke, so we bonded immediately.
Yeah. But then I was working on, that same friend invited me to PA on one of David's shorts, Death of a Cyber Salesman. So that's
Death of a Cyber Salesman.
Yeah,
it's a great little film about this this like workaday salesman that's he's trying to solicit male enhancement pills over the internet.
All right, so you started out working on that, and then you guys just bonded and became friends.
Yeah.
All right. So, what's your David? Where are you from? What's your background?
I'm from Atlanta. I actually went to college in Madison, Wisconsin, and I was an actor there, and everyone seemed to be coming to Chicago, and that seemed to be where everything was happening, so I moved here right after graduation and never looked back.
I understand that you actually you work with Trapdoor Theater.
Yeah, that was the first, I feel like, my artistic home when I first got to Chicago. They embraced me. Beata Pilch, who's run that theater company for 25 years. Yep. She took me under her wing, and she's my mentor and taught me everything I know. So
I was in storefront theater for a long time.
Cool.
And I know the people at Trapdoor. I was AD at the Factory Theater for many years.
Yeah.
And I was with them for about 14, 15 years. And they're still going strong. They're
in
rehearsals
for
a new show.
Were you there for the transition to the new space?
I was not. By that point, I was...
Pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I've seen the space. I had left the company by then because I had gotten this gig. And it's hard to do theater when you work five overnights a week. You know that because you got to rehearse 6 nights a week, and you know, and Tech Week would be a real pain in the ass if I had to come here at 1 o'clock in the morning. So, but anyway, so yeah, the theater company in Chicago was amazing. We've talked about it a lot. Now, are you part of the theater company too?
No, I'm not. My wife actually does musical theater. So
oh, she does.
I am familiar.
Yes,
with that world, and obviously we cast a lot of actors from stage. So
let's talk about how you got into film, David. You talked about the acting and everything. How did you get into working behind the camera? And you have always been a big film fan?
Yes, always. That, I think, was my biggest goal as an actor, was to end up on screen. But I think I dabbled in filmmaking my whole life. But I think when I decided to make the leap professionally was just as an actor, feeling like I had very little agency in the final product. Whereas in theater, it's like you're up there and we're the storytellers as actors. But in film, you're at the mercy of so many steps after you do your job.
Yeah.
You have no control over the final product. So,
and you don't know what it's going to look like even.
Yeah. Or, you know, I was giving you gold and you cut away from it for certain reasons bad instincts as an editor or whatever it is. A lot of things can go wrong. So I just felt like if I wanted to see the kinds of films I wanted to see, I needed to start making them or empowering people to make those kinds of films.
Okay, cool. Adam, what about you? Do you have a background, big film fan?
Yeah, for sure. I went to film school, Columbia, and I was kind of focused more on documentary films.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, my background's also in photography. That's my primary source of income.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've done a lot of camera work and sound work.
Yeah. So do you guys each have like a, was there a film when you were younger that was like transformative? Everybody, I think, who deeply loves movies like a lot of us do, there's at least one or two movies, of course, you know, maybe the one you saw at the youngest age, you know, that really sort of knocked you out. Is there any, can you narrow it down?
What do you think?
For me, Raising Arizona.
Mm.
That's a good one.
I just rewatched it
holds up,
last
right?
week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't Barry Sonnenfeld shoot that? Barry Sonnenfeld shot that, didn't he? Or am I nuts?
I'm going to have to IMDb it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think it was. Cause I'm almost positive Barry Sonnenfeld shot that. But anyway, that is a crazy movie.
Yeah.
And I remember I had already been like in love with Blood Simple when I saw Raising Arizona. So, yeah. What about you? Do you have anything?
Like I said, I think I always grew up on film, but I didn't realize that filmmaking, I guess, could be like a weird art, like the experimental theater I was into until I saw Eraserhead. And me, that was like, oh, this can be anything. Yeah. It doesn't have to be like the Hollywood thing.
Did you watch the Twin Peaks reboot?
The reboot?
Yeah.
No.
I did.
Oh, my God.
Not yet.
Man. It took me over a year to get through it.
Oh, my God. Listen, here's the thing. If you're an Eraserhead,
that's how long it is.
If you're an Eraserhead fan, you need to watch Episode 8 of Twin Peaks.
Uh-huh.
Episode 8 is one of
the new reboot.
Yeah.
Cool.
It is, without question, the craziest thing I've ever seen on TV. Like, I mean, like, it. A good portion of it is in black and white.
Uh-huh.
It feels a lot like, it's crazier than Eraserhead.
Oh.
So, I mean, seriously. And, like, on Showtime on a Sunday night at 8.
Right.
And I'm picturing suburban couples going, hey, honey, let's see what's on Showtime.
I've heard great things.
And then they click it on and go, hey, honey, let's cancel Showtime.
Let's talk to the manager.
It is absolutely insane.
Wow.
It's absolutely insane. And I mean, the whole series is great. The reboot is great.
Was that your experience with Episode 8, or are you not?
Do you remember Episode 8?
You might
it's
not be
where
there
the
yet.
Bug flies into the girl's mouth, and most of it's in black and white, and it's completely disturbing and weird. I watched it immediately again when it ended.
Wow, yeah. High praise.
It took me.
Well, you just said it took you a year to get through it.
Well, I came back to it.
Yeah.
Because Dougie, the character Dougie, kind of infuriated me, so but you know, I just hearing like that it was received a standing ovation when they premiered it.
Yeah.
David Lynch like was crying, and I had to give it another shot, and I really wanted to see like how it ended.
Yeah. I will say this for people who were just kind of familiar with the ABC run and that's it, and not Firewalk with Me or getting deeper into the mythology and the weirdness that Lynch goes to, we're probably watching that show and going, what in God's name is happening? Because there's no linear structure at all.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love Firewalk with Me.
Me too.
Yeah. I had to go back on that one. That's one of those movies that when I first saw it, I was like, what the hell is going on? And because I was a big fan of the original Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he was going to go down that lane. You know what I mean? And so I had to go back and go back and watch it again and go, all right, this is where you're going to go with it. I'm with you. I just have to kind of readjust of what I thought of the original TV series on ABC.
Yeah.
Because they kind of pitched the film like, oh, we're just going to like tie up some loose ends.
Uh-huh.
But they created a whole bunch
more. I was going to say, they did. Yeah, they opened up more cans of worms, man. Yeah. But anyway, I highly recommend that you go back and watch the reboot.
That's all I needed was a good recommendation. I feel like I've been holding off because I expect to hate it because everyone tells me it's terrible. But now I'm ready.
It's 12 hours, though, so... You know, pace yourself.
Okay.
He took him a year.
There are just certain scenes that just, they go on for so long. But there's some great humor.
I just think it's great. I'm a big fan of it. You mentioned Eraserhead, the transformative movie for me. I was 13 years old and I had already seen a ton of movies. John Carpenter's Halloween.
Okay.
It was the first movie that I ever saw where I realize what a director did.
Uh-huh.
Like, I had no clue. I'd seen a million movies, and I actively...
Because he had, like, such a strong signature, do you think?
Yeah, because I realized he was doing things with the camera, and I realized there was editing involved, and I was... It was
like
just, like, it was mind-blowing. Yeah,
goes,
exactly. Something like that. And I remember going out from the theater. I saw it at the State Lake Theater in the Loop with my father back when it opened up. I was 13. And I went outside in front of the theater, and I looked at the poster, and I looked for the director credit.
Yeah.
Just so I could go... Okay, so now I know what that is. So that was the big one for me. All right, okay, you guys, hang on, all right? We're going to take a break.
Sounds good.
David and Adam are here from Soft Cage Films. We didn't even get to the company yet, but we will. We'll talk all about that coming up right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. Get your request in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. On this day in history, Kelly Clarkson, it changed the world. Kelly Clarkson won the first American Idol, and our lives were forever changed. So we're going to talk about reality shows and stuff like that. Odd jobs that no longer exist. And much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. David Holcomb and Adam Glaskowitz are here from Soft Cage Films. They're here to talk about the company and to talk about what they do and to specifically talk about this introduction to filmmaking class that you've got set up for kids between the ages of 8 and 11. But first, let's talk about Soft Cage Films. How did it start? I understand it was founded in 2012.
Yeah, so Adam and I were in the middle of production on our first feature-length horror film called Yellow, and we decided to make a production company, and we didn't know exactly what that meant, but we knew we had certain things on our mind in terms of what we wanted the film scene to look like, how we wanted films to be made, so we made this nonprofit, and... We clarified our vision as we went on. We've brought in outside talent, kind of built sort of a filmmaking family, and we have a lot of really interesting, bold Chicago voices that are involved now.
And you cover everything, right? It's not just narratives. You guys do documentaries,
correct,
all that stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about some of the work that has been done under the umbrella of Soft Cage.
So we've come out with 5 narrative films, and we've come out with 40-something mini-docs, and then we have a lot of, like, long-term feature-length documentaries. They're all... the documentary stuff is all centered around social justice, or we've got a documentary right now that's been in production for about 5 years in Puerto Rico that just finished with this latest round of protests.
Wow. Okay.
That kicked the mayor out.
Yeah.
So that was our ending. So
wow.
That's a huge one.
Yeah. Man.
Can't write an ending like that.
No, you can't.
Diana Quiñones Rivera is the director. She's been working on that film. That's her passion project for the last 5 years. So.
Wow. What a payoff.
Yeah.
Man, you know, that's sometimes that's what happens with docs, man. You stumble upon something, like something happens, like Gimme Shelter. Nobody knew that the Hells Angels were going to kill people at Altamont when they were just filming a Rolling Stones concert, and then that happened, yeah. And they captured it. And so that happens a lot.
Luckily.
Yeah, luckily. But no, that's great. So what's the one that you gave me a copy of, you were kind enough to give me a copy of?
Graffito is our second feature film.
Okay.
So our first feature film was a film that we wanted to make an Italian giallo-style slasher film, but set it in modern-day Chicago.
Yeah, you had me a giallo.
Yeah. I realized after talking to Tom, we probably should have brought that for you, but Graffito was our sort of French new wave in modern-day Chicago.
All right.
And so we're talking about this street graffiti artist that's struggling to fight against land developers and gentrification, things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, and you directed this?
Yes.
All right.
And
cool.
Sort of shot it on the fly. We had like a 20-page script and did that French new wave thing.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing it in. And how many people work with you guys at Soft Cage approximately?
15 to 20, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, various levels of involvement.
Mm-hmm. And what happens with the films? What do you guys try to do with the films? You guys try to take them on the festival circuit? Do you guys try to do all of that stuff, like to get the films to be seen?
Yeah, so we definitely do the festival circuit. We're also big on kind of curating our own events where we have our film screen alongside other films and live music and discussions and poetry. And
do you have another?
Like
do you have something coming up that you can plug?
We shot a musical last summer, our first musical film, a narrative film, and that's going to be coming out very early next year.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a short film we just shot for the 48-hour film festival.
Oh, sure.
Screening at Music Box in September, and then we'll do a festival run with that, too.
We do I have Jerry in all the time.
Cool.
Every year I have him in to talk about that.
They're a blast, man.
It's crazy. You know, we've had the winners come in into the studio and talk about it. I just can't believe that it gets done that quickly.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine the lack of sleep.
I mean, it's normally such a long process that it's really gratifying to get through a weekend and then you have a film.
Yeah, that's and on cool. top of that, you got that challenge of having that line of dialogue and that prop and whatever. You guys don't even know what genre you're going to get. You have to pull a genre out of a hat.
Yeah.
I love Jerry. I think Jerry's a great guy, and I really I think it's a great organization.
We got sci-fi this year, so.
You got sci-fi?
We're really excited.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. All right. So when you guys shoot, it's over the course of one weekend when you guys...
That was last weekend?
You guys filmed last weekend?
Yeah. Was it 2 weekends ago?
It was a week or two ago.
A week or two ago. Okay. And it's done.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's done.
Very
it's
cool.
Done.
All right. All right. Well, great, man. Okay. So let's talk about this class. Introduction to Filmmaking, it's from Script to Screen, Children's Film Class, and it is at the Hairpin Arts Center at 2810 North Milwaukee. It's an 8-week schedule from October 2nd to November 20th. Tell me about now. If you've taught children before,
yeah. So I taught a really cool class, and I'm making some adjustments to that. But I liked this idea of the entire class collaborating on the writing. All the way through to editing, and then at the end of the class, they have a film that's done. A really exciting new development that might not be in our press right now is that this film is going to premiere at the Music Box.
Oh, wow.
We wanted to give them this feeling of, like, this is what it's like to be a real filmmaker going to your own premiere at a legit local theater.
Yeah.
So that's a really exciting thing for
that's
me.
That's really cool,
yeah.
Man. That's really, really cool. Man, the people at the Music Box just do a bang-up job.
Yeah.
Man. They really do.
Yeah.
That's really great. Now, so how many kids in the class, ultimately? I mean, what are you looking at limit-wise?
I think about 10 is the right number.
That sounds...
Before it turns into chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is after school, so I know the kids are going to be a little bit, you know...
Yeah.
They don't want to sit, right?
Class time, 4:30 to 6.
Yeah, short and sweet.
4:30 to 6. And it's October 2nd through November 20th. And if people want to register their kids or if they want to get involved, how can they do that?
Go to Hairpin Arts Center's website or softcagefilms.com. There's a form to fill out. Just submit some simple information. We'll follow up with the curriculum.
And now, how long have you been teaching?
Only about a year or so, but I got really interested in it because we've worked with a lot of kids on our films recently, mm-hmm. Which was something in the past that I was terrified of. But I had some really great experiences, and now I'm like all in on these kids.
Yeah. Adam, how long have you been teaching?
This is my my first
your first
teaching
your
role.
First your yeah. first foray.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Are you excited about it?
I am. I am really excited about it. We've done we had some meetings at Free Spirit Media and kind of seeing like what just the impact that can have on, you know, on students and kids, and be able to like tell their own stories and give them the tools they need to kind of like create. So yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very, very cool.
And their ideas are insanely awesome.
I bet. Yeah.
I don't think they're used to adults saying, yes, that's a great idea. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Because, no, I mean, it, you know, when you're between the ages of 8 and 11, your brain goes, you know, to places where an 8 to 11-year-old would go.
Yeah.
And so to have that encouraged, I think, is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So how crazy are the movies that they want to make?
Oh, I mean, they're so sort of surreal, but when we start to shape it, it becomes very brilliant. Like, you think it's all just random and they're, like, messing with you, but then once you start to try to synthesize it, like, the last class I was in, they wanted it to be like, oh, the lead character is this poor cobbler's son, and I'm like, do any of you guys even know what a cobbler is? Like, where do you get this stuff from?
A poor cobbler's son. That's pretty great. That's pretty. It's always fun to see what these kids come up with. Years ago, I dated a girl who co-founded a theater company called Barrel of Monkeys.
Yeah.
Yes, I was gonna mention that.
Yeah. I dated Helena for a while and for a couple of years, and was right at the beginning of Barrel of Monkeys at that time. They had just gotten out of Northwestern and they had started the company, and they had just started That's Weird Grandma, like when we were together, and to see. Because what it is they go into classrooms and they teach classes at Chicago public schools, and they go in and they do a few, you know, do like a week or two with the kids, have them write stories, and then they put those stories up, and they bring in professional actors who have a great background in Chicago theater, and they act out these kids' stories. And I can't tell you the number of times I've you know, seen class, because I used to go to class and hang out and watch and stuff, and seen performances, or seen, you know, That's Weird Grandma, which I believe is still playing at the Neo Futurarium every Monday night. Yeah. My God, it's like 20 years it's been playing. But the number of times I've been so, one, impressed, and then, like, two, moved, like, really deeply moved by what these kids are expressing. And, of course, performed really great by some very, very funny and very, very talented actors. But where the brain goes sometimes, you know, when you got these little kids... And, you know, a lot of them were Chicago public schools that didn't have any art program or anything like that. And so the voices really varied depending on neighborhood or where you grew up or where they were. And it was just it's really satisfying to see that. And I know that, like, working with these kids, you guys are going to have a blast. And you already do have a blast doing
it. Yeah. I mean, we have to. It reminds us how exciting it is that first time someone hands you a camera and you get to, like, shoot your vision.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We kind of take it for granted now because we just have cameras. But
right.
It's right. Very freeing.
Yeah, very cool. All right, why don't we take another quick break, you guys? Hang on a second. David and Adam are here from Soft Cage Films. We'll talk more about Soft Cage Films. And again, introduction to filmmaking from script to screen at Children's Film Class, which starts on October 2nd at Hairpin Arts Center. You can go to hairpinartscenter.org/classes, or you can go to softcagefilms.com for more info or to get your kid signed up. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. here on WGN. Lots of other cool stuff coming up on the show. Right now, though, we are talking with David Holcomb and Adam Blaskowitz about Soft Cage Films. It's a nonprofit that was formed back in 2012. Making tons of films, all types, all sizes. You want to talk a little bit more about the mission statement, about the sort of the politics that are involved, the messages that you guys want to get across. It's important to you. So talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah, I think that Adam and I, through our discussions, were just really concerned with the power of film and media in general, and how it's shaping our world, and we wanted to contribute to that using this medium that had a huge impact on us, and to try to make the world a better place, or like envision a better world, or to connect with people. So the mission statement is to produce films that have not only like really bold aesthetics and are pushing the medium using experimental techniques, but also have like a strong social justice message mm-hmm. of some kind. And we can interpret that in a lot of different ways.
That's great. Now, how often do you guys get together? Do you get together to pitch stuff, throw ideas around? How does that work? And the people that are involved with the nonprofit, how do you guys all get together and throw stuff around?
Yeah, I guess films come to us a lot of different ways. Adam's been working on his film that he's been writing, and we're going to sort of help workshop that as a team mm-hmm. and get the script where it needs to be so that we can feel confident moving into production.
Yeah.
And some films are in production. A lot of documentaries come to us, and they need some help finishing, and so we jump on board and help co-produce, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, we're happy to jump on at any stage as long as it meets our mission and we have the resources.
Yeah, and as a board, we decide kind of what we're going to produce and kind of what our extent or how we're going to kind of allocate the resources. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. So you there was something off the air when we were during the commercial. You wanted to there was a certain film that you wanted to mention. So let's talk about some of the other stuff that's upcoming.
Yeah. So we have what we call our flagship narrative films. So every year or two, we'll produce our big narrative film, which we put all of our resources into. We shoot over the summer. Last year it was Black Sight the Musical. My producing partner on that, Spence Warren, I'm helping him produce his film next summer called An Adventure of Robin Hood. And we're for real doing a Robin Hood film in modern day Chicago. We're casting Robin Hood as a woman. She's fighting against these sort of M. Fishman type property developers who are taking over the neighborhoods and shoving all the undesirable residents out. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be robbing from the rich to give to the poor.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
Bringing Robin Hood back to her social justice roots.
So where can people see some of these movies?
So Black Sight will be out probably January or February 2020. We just finished the edit, moving into the music right now. Mm. First musical, it was a huge journey.
Oh, I bet.
It's going to be 3 years in the making once it comes out. But it's,
who wrote the music?
So that was a lot of different local bands in Chicago, such as Ono. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ono. They're a performance art band with like some punk rock roots that mm-hmm. go back to the 70s in Chicago. Some, you know, sort of an a la carte, different composers. Just, we have like a whole bunch of different styles of music in the film, so I wanted to get like the right people. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if there's an overall sort of genius. I can't think of a metaphor for that, but yeah.
So it's a lot of great local bands. There's a lot of, Chicago has one of the most diverse music scenes in the world. So obviously, if you're going to use a ton of bands from Chicago, they're going to be different. They're going to be varied.
Yeah, because we've got hip hop, we've got folk, we've got punk, we've got a show stopping finale that's in the more sort of musical theater realm. So it's kind of all over the place, but mm-hmm. there is a through line.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That's very, very cool.
It's exciting. A true story, too.
It is?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Musical. I can't even imagine making a musical. Been in a couple of them.
Yeah.
Directed one on stage, not a movie.
On stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what we found making this film was that no one, and we worked with maybe 200 people on the film, like no one had worked on a musical film before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of theater happening, but film is a completely different beast when it comes to music.
Yeah, completely different. And that's evident when you go and see a movie that's based on a Broadway musical or a stage musical.
Right.
Because you're like, wow, you really screwed that up.
Yeah.
You didn't capture what was great
about it. Thinking of a particular...
Yeah, oh, many. I have many. But well, that's great. Now, what about, you brought in a DVD for me. Are DVDs available? Can people go to the website and take a look at some of the movies? Or
soon.
Oh,
we
okay.
are overhauling yes. our website right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure people got a chance to get your stuff. You know?
For sure.
City of Lost still on Amazon.
So, yes, our film, our first film, Yellow, the distributor renamed it City of Lust. That's available on Amazon. I think some video on demand services like Comcast. That one's pretty easy to find.
City of Lust.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not my choice.
Well, why was it changed?
Well, first of all, they didn't like that the original title, Yellow, starts with a letter of the alphabet that occurs near the end. They wanted it to be bumped up in the search history.
So they got the C.
And they wanted it to be urban and sexy. So, City of Lust.
Okay.
Boom.
Did they change anything else about the movie?
The cover art. No, they didn't change any of the
So there's not a frame of the movie has changed.
Just the
title.
Literal title sequence. That's it.
That's it.
So it's the original vision. Luckily.
So it's still the movie. It's just a different title and different artwork.
Yeah, so okay. I was okay with it.
All right, and people can check that
However,
one.
However, the artwork is a spoiler for the ending of the film, which is a little frustrating.
Oh, man.
I mean, it looks cool, but...
That's a spoiler for the ending of the movie. Wow. Okay.
That's what you got to do to make the big bucks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That would be like that would be like the poster for Fight Club having He Is Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
As the
It's actually not terribly far off from that.
Oh, it's not.
It is like this mistaken identity doppelganger situation, and they just kind of threw it up there.
Yeah. Whenever I bring up Fight Club, which is a movie that I love, I had read the book before I saw the movie.
Yeah.
So I always ask people, what was it like? Because I knew he was Tyler Durden the whole time, because I'd read the book. And so, like, when you discover that he's Tyler Durden, I always ask people, what did you guys think when you first saw it? And did you go, what the hell? Did it freak you out?
So that's a film that I literally watched every single day of, like, in senior year of high school. Oh, like, we'd always play hooky and just watch it. So I don't even remember the first time I saw it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I've always seen it.
Yeah, okay. And that makes sense. What about you, Adam? Do you remember the first time?
I don't. I mean, I've seen it multiple times. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a shock. I don't have that visceral, like...
Yeah. I was just always... Because I love the movie, and I also love the book, but... I always, like, envy people for not knowing, because I already went in there and I'm like, all right, I know the big twist. Oh, boy. You know?
Yeah.
It's still a great movie.
I feel like the twist wasn't as earth-shattering as, like, the rest of the film.
Yeah.
And what it was trying to do and the way it was doing it. It wasn't, like, the sixth sense for me where it was like, oh, I have to rethink everything that came before.
It's cool, though, if you go back and watch it repeatedly, which I know both of you have. I love it every time Durden shows up, subliminally, in the movie.
Like, he spliced his own porn into his film.
And it also, for my money, the ending is completely different than the book. Have you guys read the book?
I read it once.
It's completely different. It goes It goes on much longer. There's a whole long hospital sequence in the book at the end, and you realize that it's still happening. Like there are members of Tyler Durden's army that are now working at the hospital.
He gets committed,
No, he's in the hospital because he's physically all screwed up at the end of the movie. But I can't explain to you how much I love the final shot of that movie.
Yeah.
I can't even explain to you.
With it's the pixies.
It's the destruction of the business world falling down right in front of you. These two people holding hands. The Pixies start playing and a big penis pops up on screen.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is the greatest thing ever.
That checks all of your boxes.
Exactly. All right.
I just heard that the third novel, Fight Club 3, is coming out soon.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll have to check that out. All right. Well, anyway, let's do one more reminder for everybody about Introduction to Filmmaking from Script to Screen. It's a children's film class. Kids between the ages of 8 and 11, grades 3 to 5. It will start on October 2nd. It runs through November 20th on Wednesday afternoons. The final big film screening will be Wednesday, December 4th at 4:30.
At
the Music Box Theater, the beautiful Music Box Theater. And it's hairpinartcenter.org/classes or softcagefilms.com. So very cool. Hey, it was great to meet you guys.
Thank you for having us.
It was a lot of fun, man. It was really a lot of fun. Good luck with this. And I hope everything goes really, really well. And good luck with the Robin Hood movie.
Appreciate it.
Because it sounds pretty great.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And again, if you guys want more information to learn more about Soft Cage, you can go to softcagefilms.com, softcagefilms.com. They're also on Facebook. That's facebook.com/softcagefilms. All right, David, Adam, thank you guys.
Thank you.
All right, have a great morning. We'll take a break here. The news is coming up next. I'm 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. You made Wild Card Wednesday. And that is Any Artist, Any Song, Anything. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from John in Decatur, a little Miles Davis.
Okay. kicking off Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, I want to get in. It's 312-981-7200. Okay. It's a historic day. 17 years ago, if you can believe that. 17 years ago on this date, Kelly Clarkson became our first American Idol. You know, it's funny that that show was sort of like, when it first came on, it was just sort of like a summer replacement show. Because obviously the show ended in September, which is normally when shows begin. But, so she won the first American Idol. Now, you were really young, right?
Yeah, because this was 02.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what American Idol was.
Ah. Vic, did you get caught up in the madness of American Idol in 2002?
Yeah, I think the beginning, yeah, first few years.
Yeah.
I definitely remember her winning.
I watched it. I got to say, I got caught up in it. I didn't think it was as great. I mean, there have been other seasons that I liked more than the first one. And there have been certainly other contestants that I liked more. I liked the Dave Matthews guy who had the same like name, like Rob Robson or Paul Paulson or Flipson.
Oh, Philip Phillipson?
Yeah, Phillips. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked him because he was a Dave ripoff. He even covered a Dave song on one of the episodes. But and he won. I think Philip Phillips won.
I think so. I know that song he did afterward, Home.
Yeah.
Became such a massive hit. American Family Insurance uses it in every single one of their commercials. He's probably making thousands. He's made millions of dollars off that one.
But I'm pretty sure he won. I know some of the other contestants that have become really, really popular did not win their seasons. You know what I mean? Like some of the biggest selling artists to come out of American Idol were not winners.
Mm-hmm.
They were like runners up.
Yeah, Philip Phillips won in 2012.
2012.
Yeah.
2012. The Dave guy.
Do you remember Ruben Studdard?
Yeah, he was the second one to win, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, because everybody thought it was going to be Clay Aiken.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's right.
Because it was between him and Clay Aiken.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's what they say about American Idol. On September 4th, and by the way, Kelly Clarkson, I adore Kelly Clarkson. I adore her. I think she's so funny, and I'm looking forward to her talk show. She's got a talk show that's going to be like a daytime talk show, and I can't wait. And she's got an incredible voice. So, but everybody thought Sideshow Bob was going to win. That
Justin
Guarini. Sideshow Bob. I thought Sideshow Bob was going to win. But he didn't. She did. So on September 4th, 2002, Kelly Clarkson, a 20-year-old cocktail waitress from Texas, wins the first season of American Idol in a live television broadcast from Hollywood's Kodak Theater. Clarkson came out on top after in the amateur singing contest over 23-year-old runner-up Justin Guarini after millions of viewers cast their votes for her by phone. She was awarded a recording contract and went on to sell millions of albums and establish a successful movie career. Clarkson and Guarini also co-starred in the 2003 box office bomb From Justin to Kelly, which was an unspeakable movie.
I never saw it, but I remember seeing the commercials for it and thinking, why?
It was, oh my God, was it bad.
I was like 9, and I was like, ugh.
It was nominated for a Golden Raspberry Award for the year's worst film, but it lost to the Jennifer Lopez Ben Affleck vehicle, Geely.
I'd say that's fair.
No, Geely's better than, well... No, it's a question of which one's worse.
That's true.
Justin to Kelly's worse than Geely.
Even with that, that's the one with the turkey time bit? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Starting with its first season, American Idol became one of the most popular television programs in U.S. history and spawned a slew of talent show competition shows in its wake. American Idol was based on the British TV show called Pop Idol, which was developed by the English-born entertainment executive Simon Fuller. Debuted in the UK in 2001, the Idol concept was shopped around the United States and reportedly rejected by several TV networks before Fox picked it up. The American Idol premiere, which aired on June 11th, 2002, was co-hosted by Ryan Seacrest and Brian Dunkelman. Dunkelman! I miss Dunkelman.
Who is Ryan Dunkelman?
It's Brian Dunkelman.
Brian Dunkelman.
He dropped after season one. Brian Dunkelman. He was he's one of those generic, like Seacrest, one of those generic, you know, hey, how you doing? I host TV shows. Yeah. I'm Ryan Seacrest and I'm a jackass, you know. Yeah, Brian Dunkelman. He's the one who dropped out.
Yeah, I'm looking at this dude's face, and I don't think I've ever seen him before.
I mean, that's the only thing he's known for. I mean, he was one of those guys that you see at premieres and on red carpets. You know what I mean? Like a correspondent for whatever entertainment thing is on. He was one of those guys, and he was a radio guy too.
Yeah,
and a lot of these guys have radio background. Seacrest has radio background too.
Right.
But Dunkelman, besides having one of the greatest names ever, Brian Dunkelman, he dropped out of the show. It was the stupidest career, you know, move the guy ever made, was he dropped out of the show, which became, you know, like incredibly popular.
Uh-huh. Apparently, he has two other aliases, B-Dog and Dunky Fresh.
What? B-Dog? Dunky Fresh? Wow, all right. It starred a trio of judges, the acerbic British music executive Simon Cowell, the singer-choreographer Paula Abdul, and the musician-producer Randy Jackson. The show followed the judges as they selected contestants who were required to be teens or young adults from open auditions around the United States. Contestants who made the cut were flown to Hollywood, where they eventually were narrowed down to 10 finalists who performed live on television and were critiqued by the judges. Home viewers phoned in their votes for their favorite performers, and each week, the contestant who received the lowest number of votes was eliminated from the competition. Following Clarkson's season one victory, subsequent American Idol winners included Ruben Studdard, Fantasia Barrino, Carrie Underwood. Carrie Underwood has got to be like up there in terms of like...
I'd say so.
Like sales and popularity. She's massive.
Massive yeah. Career.
Taylor Hicks. Soul Patrol!
Was he kind of... He had like gray hair,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And he wasn't even that old. I think he was like 40 or something. No, he wasn't even that. He was in his 30s.
Yeah, he had that
Because
there
was
kind
like an
Steve
age
Martin
limit.
Thing.
But he had like the... He had the white hair.
Yeah.
Soul Patrol! Jordan Sparks, who I love. I love
she
Jordan
was
Sparks.
Big for a while. She was big for a while.
And David Cook, having varying degrees of success in their careers, in some cases American Idol runner-ups, such as Clay Aikens, season 2, second place, Chris Daughtry, season 5, fourth place, have sold more records than certain American Idol winners. Jennifer Hudson, who finished 7th in season 3 of the show, later won an Academy Award for her performance in Dreamgirls, the film adaptation of the hit Broadway musical, and she received a star on the Walk of Fame in 2013. She's the biggest one.
She's got to be the best one, too. Like, I mad respect to Kelly Clarkson, of course, but yeah. I think even Kelly would say Jennifer Hudson is in a different
her league. Voice is, it's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
It's unreal. You know when they did
the Jeffersons thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Norman Lear brings back an episode of All in the Family with Marissa Tomei stealing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Woody Harrelson. And then they did the Jeffersons with Jamie Foxx and Wanda Sykes. Which I thought that was a great special, and
it was awesome.
I really hope that they would do it again. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
I mean, it was maybe like a couple months ago.
No, wasn't it longer? Were you producing my show then?
Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah.
Okay.
it was somewhere between now and March.
It just seems much longer ago.
Yeah. No.
Because I enjoyed it so much, and I would like to see it come back, like where they take two more classic sitcoms from the 70s and cast new people in them.
Well, if Kimmel has anything to say about it, I think they'll do it again.
Yeah. But anyway, one of the major highlights and surprises was Jennifer Hudson singing the Jeffersons theme song Moving On Up live. Because this was all done live. Also, it was all done live. The shows were live because Jamie Foxx screwed up like 12 times. But I remember watching it, and when Jennifer Hudson was singing that, I was like, my God, this woman. So, I wasn't crazy about Dreamgirls, but she had the best moment in the movie. Like, that number was, that's what you call that brings down the house. That's a number that brings down the house.
Is that the one where she's like, and I'm telling you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh. Yeah. So there it is. American Idol. Our very first winner was crowned on this date in 2002, Kelly Clarkson. And, you know, they talk about you go on to, you get a recording contract. Okay, that recording contract that she got was basically she signed her soul over to the producers of American Idol. That's why she had to do From Justin to Kelly. And that's why, like, her first couple of records were not what she wanted. They were what American Idol wanted her to be. So then when that contract ended and she recorded Since You've Been Gone and then started doing her own thing, right, fantastic.
A very thinly veiled dig at the folks from American Idol.
There's no question about it. I love that song.
It's great. One of the great pop hits of the early 2000s.
I absolutely agree with that. And I've said this before on the air. Every song called Since You've Been Gone is good. Because there's Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow. There's Since You've Been Gone by The Outfield. Since You're Gone is The Cars.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, and that's great too. So yeah. Every song that is titled Since You've Been Gone is great. So but anyway, so we're going to jump into reality shows. What are your favorite reality shows? What are the best ones? Did you watch a lot of American Idol? Were you kind of addicted to American Idol? I stopped watching it. My ex-wife and I watched it every year. Like every season we watched it. She was my girlfriend and my wife. We watched it. It was regular. That's when Pants on the Ground happened. Oh, let's get Pants on the Ground. If we can't talk about American Idol without playing Pants on the Ground, which is one of the greatest moments in American Idol history. Larry, what's his name? Larry Butler, Captain. He's like a Colonel Larry Worth. But Pants on the Ground.
Pants on the ground, pants on the ground. Looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. With the gold in your mouth, hat turned sideways, pan hit the ground. Call yourself a cool cat, looking like a fool. Walking downtown with your pants on the ground. Giddy up. Hey, get your pants off the ground. Looking like a fool, talking with your pants on the ground. Giddy up. Hey, get your pants off the ground. Looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. Go in the mouth,
okay.
Hat turned sideways.
The great General Larry Platt.
Larry Platt. They brought him back. They brought him back for the finale live, so that he could perform Pants on the Ground.
It's remarkable.
I'm telling you, I remember watching that, and I don't know, I could not stop laughing.
Well, do you remember the She Bang guy?
Yeah, what was his name? He actually released two albums from that. What was his name? Henry? No. What?
William Hung.
William Hung. That's it. So William Hung actually, you know, had a career. I mean, as a joke. Then it got to the point, though. I will say this: like after that, a couple of seasons in, after like the William Hung stuff, American Idol got criticized, and I think justifiably so. For purposely bringing in bad singers so that they could make fun of them. You know, people who didn't know that they couldn't sing. And that became like, you know, the audition part of the show where they go to different cities and they audition, the non-live part of the show. It went under a lot of criticism because not only would they make fun of them because they can't sing, but they would have one door locked to leave the studio. And inevitably they would pull the wrong door and then they would make fun of them for pulling the wrong door, these contestants. So it got to the point where it was like, that's for the first like few weeks of the show during the audition process. It was just about making fun of people who didn't know they couldn't sing and opening the wrong door. And I got to the point where I was like, okay, you know, at first it was funny. It was kind of funny. I was like, these guys can't sing. They think they're great, but it just got to the point where that's what they emphasized. And they were showing, it got to the point where during, I think it was one specific season, during the audition process, they were showing more bad auditions than good. And on purpose.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if it gets ratings, they're just going to shove it down your throat.
But then they stopped that completely.
Yeah.
Like, because they caught some heat. They really, really caught some heat, and then they stopped it completely.
It was for the best.
Yeah, I agree. Although Pants on the Ground, he's but the
that,
man.
That guy had the confidence of a million, you know, people. It was so crazy.
He was way past the age limit. So they knew, like the producers knew, we got to get this guy on TV. He was 62. I think the age limit was like in the, you have to be like in your 30s. That's your age limit. I think early to mid 30s was your age limit to be a contestant. And if you were past that, you couldn't audition. But as soon as this guy came in, I'm sure that the people who worked on the show saw this guy do Pants on the Ground and went, this guy needs to be on TV.
Someone got on the walkie-talkie. They're like, all right,
put,
hold up.
Put Larry, what's his name?
General Larry Platt.
General Larry Platt. We got to get General Larry Platt on TV singing Pants on the Ground. And it became a social media moment at a time when social media wasn't as crazy as it is now. Because that was, like 10, 11 years ago, Pants on the Ground.
Jeez.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We're talking on the anniversary of Kelly Clarkson winning American Idol, the first time ever. We're talking about American Idol, if you want to talk about that, and the best reality shows of all time. There's a very comprehensive article that they put together in Complex Magazine. And so there's a ton of them, and we'll talk about those and the worst, too, if you want to jump in.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Second period.
I love that song, and it's played before every home game. They play it. They play it before every home game at the UC. You can't. It's not a complete. You got to get there early enough because they play it pretty early. They play it right after the guys get off the ice after they skate when the Zambonis come out and fix up the ice before the game. So it's pretty early, but it's worth being in the stadium that early at the UC that early to hear that song get played in its entirety over the PA.
You love to see it.
Oh, I love it. Who requested the good old hockey game?
That's coming to us from our friend Canadian Bill.
Canadian Bill, of course.
Stomping Tom
of
Connors.
Of course Canadian Bill would request that.
I'm ready for hockey season.
We are less than a month away.
Yeah.
Less than a month away. And by the way, football season starts as I think if you live under a rock, you don't know. I wouldn't give his troubles to a monkey on a rock. That's from David Letterman. One of my favorite. I wouldn't give his troubles to a monkey on a rock. But anyway, football season kicks off Thursday night. 100th anniversary of the NFL. It all gets kicked off here in town. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be nuts. Getting here to work is going to be crazy.
I got to say, best sports rivalry?
It's one of them. Yeah, I mean, well, it's a legendary rivalry. There's no question about it. It's just, you know, I mean, yes, it is. I think it probably is the best sports rivalry. It's not my favorite sport, and I'm not as invested in it, but it's huge.
Yeah,
love it. And it's on a national level, and football season is being kicked off. It's the only NFL game on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd have to take a look, but it's the prime one.
That's it. And it's going to be nuts down here. I don't know what, man, like I said, when I get to work, because I usually get here about 11-ish. I think the streets are going to be filled with maniacs Thursday night. But
it's the only game.
That's
Thursday.
The kickoff of the NFL. The whole 100th anniversary of the NFL gets kicked off in this city at Soldier Field with the Bears playing the Packers. That's a big deal.
Wow.
That is a big, big deal. And people are going to go nuts. The ratings are going to be through the roof.
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get down here right around the time when the game is ending, I would imagine. But anyway, that night into Friday, that Friday morning, Rick Geezer is going to be with us. And he'll be live in studio for sports songs because football season, every time we have a new sport kickoff, the new season kickoff, we have Rick in because he has sports songs that have everything to do with every sport. So we'll do a special football version of sports songs with Rick Easer. That'll be Friday morning. Tomorrow morning, by the way, is our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Talk about some TV. So, speaking of TV, you see that? Now I'm segueing back into what we were talking about because I'm a professional.
Hall of Fame, baby.
That's right. I've got a plaque in the sidewalk across the river because of things like that. That's we are talking reality TV. Today marks the 17th anniversary of Kelly Clarkson being the very first American Idol. So we're talking about reality TV. What are some of the best, some of the worst? What are your favorites? Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland.
Hello.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I don't watch reality TV shows unless MythBusters counts, but there's one that was so bad that I heard a lot about it back in the day. The Swan.
Oh, my God. That was so deeply offensive, that movie, or that show. I think this is, you were too young, I think, again, Tom. Do you remember? No, you remember The Swan?
I do.
Oh, my God.
It was shocking. It was shocking stuff.
For people who don't know.
Something about plastic surgery,
women would come in who were considered ugly, and they would have to be, you know, as pathetic as possible before they would get, like, a makeover and surgery. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, though, it did actually inspire a really funny SNL sketch, like right as the show was at the height of its whatever popularity it had, or however it was part of the zeitgeist, SNL did a hilarious parody of it. So that's the only good thing that came out of it. Yeah, that was a reprehensible show.
Yeah, and probably what happened was they came out and, you're beautiful now. Your life is going to be great from now on.
Yeah.
I wonder if that really happened for any of them.
Yeah, I don't know. Boy, that was a bad show. All right, Mark, thanks.
Have a great show.
Yeah, it's actually similar to a show that was on in the 50s and 60s called Queen for a Day. And this was a show where women would come on the show, housewives or people, women would come on. They would tell these really horrible stories about their lives, these really pathetic and sad and deeply depressing lives that they led, and whoever had the most depressing story or was the most pathetic won money. That was called Queen for a Day. They would get a crown and a sash and then I think a check. I can't remember who the host was, but this was another one of those. That was a notorious show in the late 50s and into the 60s, Queen for a Day, and that was the exact plot of it. So there was a precedent set back in the 60s with Queen for a Day, but when The Swan came out. All right, let's take a break here. We're talking reality shows. Which ones are you into? Which ones do you hate? Which ones do you love? 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? It's any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Get them in now. We'll play them. 312-981-7200. All right. Who made that request?
That's coming to us from Joliet Germain.
Okay.
For Your Love, the Yardbirds.
The Yardbirds. All right. So, today marks the 17th anniversary of Kelly Clarkson being crowned the very first American Idol, so we thought we'd bust out some reality TV talk and talk about some of your favorites and some of the best and maybe some of the worst. One of my favorites, which is no longer on, I'm kind of upset about that, was Face Off on the Sci-Fi Channel. I loved that show. I adore that show, and it was one of my favorites because there was not a lot of drama. There wasn't, like, they weren't living in the house and yelling at each other and like those tattoo shows are completely different. Like the tattoo shows, it's all about drama and flipping tables, and you know, I wanted to watch the tattoo shows, and I did. I watched a few of them. There was the one with Navarro, Ink Master. And then there was the one with Paul, what's his face from the Blink 182, I think, or one of those. I don't know. Ink Village, I don't know. But it was all about like creating like friction between the artists, as opposed to how great is that tattoo. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see people be creative. Face Off was all about that. For people who don't know, Face Off was a reality TV show. People who are in the Hollywood like makeup industry. And it's about special effects makeup. It was about creating special effects makeup appliances and makeup effects. And I just thought it was great. They had great, you know, celebrities come on. Rick Baker came on twice. Lance Hendrickson was on. Rick Baker was a guest judge on a pretty regular basis on that show. But they brought in a whole bunch of people from the industry. And the challenges were really, really fun. And the other thing was it was all about what these people were creating. It was all about the whole makeup job, not just the mask or not just the appliances, but the whole look, the whole costume, everything about it. You're creating a new creature, a new character every week. And there was the other thing about it was like if someone's, you know, trying to mold their cast and they can't get it open or something, the other people help. So the artists were there. They helped each other. There was like, no, you suck. You know, they weren't yelling at each other for not doing the dishes, you know, living in the house or something like that. And it was all about making really, really cool characters and really, really cool makeup. And I'm disappointed Sci-Fi canceled it. I guess maybe people stopped watching it. I don't know. But I really, really loved that show. I just thought it was great.
Well, it was nice to have a positive reality show like that, reality competition.
Right.
As opposed to Sci-Fi's other reality show that I remember was King of the Nerds, which was so offensive in how much it was exploiting people.
I had Curtis Armstrong on to talk about, and we talked about King of the Nerds.
How did he feel about it?
He loved it.
I get why he was in it. You know, I'm not saying that Curtis is a bad guy for being in it. I just watched it. I was like, this is just
the reason why it didn't come back for, I guess it was on for two seasons because I watched it.
Very short lived.
It was on for two seasons and they wanted to come back for a third season, but Robert Carradine refused. Robert Carradine wouldn't do it. I don't know if he wasn't getting enough money or if like you, he was offended by it. I thought it was pretty funny.
I thought it was pretty funny. God, they were just, maybe it was because they wanted you to be a little bit embarrassed for them, but I don't know.
Well, but Face Off was just, you know, that was the deal.
It was a great show.
It really was.
A very good show.
And the people and a lot of people went on to do great work. They've worked on great movies and TV shows and stuff and are successful makeup artists right now, even though everything is kind of CGI at this point. But wherever there's practical effects that they're using in TV or movies, the people actually, the winners they're and working. Even the runners-up are working in Hollywood.
They carry on the legacy,
and
man.
They open up their own studios and stuff. So they should bring that show back. Maybe people confused it with the John Woo movie, and they didn't know what it was. And when they turned it on and they didn't see Nicolas Cage, you know, and John Travolta, they were... Hey, by the way, did you see how much money John Travolta and Fred Durst's collaboration did not make?
I know that it was a critical failure on pretty much every level.
I believe the box office, and I think you can look this up, was $400.
That would make sense because I saw a lot of headlines saying, "Oh, these are the only movies that ever made like less than $400 or like
$400."
No one wanted to see it, man. You know?
Yeah.
I love you, John, but geez.
Well, he hasn't made a good movie in a long time.
I know.
But yeah, $400. I mean, that is minuscule.
We'll always have Blowout.
Yeah. Which also didn't make any money.
Yeah. More than $400.
It did make more than $400.
Thank
God. Just from me alone, it made more than $400. The amount of times I saw that movie in the theater. All right. We are talking about... reality TV. We have a bunch of texts coming in, and we've got a whole bunch of them. And if you watched like Face Off, man, I really do miss that show. Here's Greg on WGN. Hi, Greg.
Hey, I have a question regarding the reboot of American Idol on ABC with Ryan Seacrest and with Katy Perry and Lionel Richie on the panel.
Yeah.
Do you guys know how that reboot is doing ratings-wise?
It's coming back.
Okay.
Yeah, but, so it's coming back.
But is it getting like similar ratings to what it had on Fox maybe at some point or that you know of?
So looking at the numbers here, Greg, it's doing pretty solid. It's season 16, which was the first season that it was on ABC, got an 8.63 for its season finale, and pretty much the same thing for season 17 after it, which is pretty much in line with the latter seasons, the final seasons of American Idol on Fox. So it's not nearly close to the astronomical highs of its popularity on Fox, but it's doing all right.
It's doing okay. But I mean, it's never going to match what it did in the first like four or five seasons on Fox, because at one time it was a juggernaut.
Yeah, if you're looking at stuff like early to mid 2000s,
oh yeah,
you're getting numbers like 30.76
absolutely
million viewers as opposed to 8.63. But right. 8.63 in this day and age,
yeah,
is not terrible. That's a middle of the road hit.
Greg, thanks for the call, man. 312-981-7200. You ever watch Yes Say Yes to the Dress?
Yeah, when you live with a woman in this mid-day and age, it's on. Yep. It's definitely on, and I can't stand it.
I don't live with a woman currently, and I haven't lived with a woman in a very long time, but I have lived with women, and Say Yes to the Dress was a good one that was on. I didn't hate it. You know which one I actually liked? Was the one with it was on TLC, and it's the one where the friends of a woman or a guy, usually a woman, secretly take like pictures of the horrible clothes that she wears and how she presents herself, and then she comes on the show, you know, and the two people, the guy and a girl, hosted it. And they surprise her, this person who's going to, you know, and they want to give her a makeover. But in order for her to get the makeover, she has to go through her closet. They go through her closet and throw all her clothes out, throw all her crappy clothes out. And then they do like they try on new dresses and new outfits and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, she shows up at a party completely made over. With a brand new wardrobe, brand new makeup, the whole kind of thing, shocks all her friends and family at how different she looks.
Is it What Not to Wear?
What Not to Wear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's classic.
That was one Heather and I watched all the time.
Yeah, it's going to get revived here next year.
Who were the hosts?
The hosts were Stacey London.
Right.
And then for season one, it was Wayne Scott Lucas. And then from then on, Clinton Kelly.
Clinton Kelly. Yeah. There you go.
So it was Stacey London, Clinton Kelly.
Yeah.
And that was a big one in the UK. That's an adaptation of a UK
show. A lot of these are.
They really love reality shows in the UK. It's very strange.
Mm-hmm. Here's one I don't get. I don't get Dancing with the Stars. I just don't. I don't understand it. I've tried to watch it. I watched it when Grandpa Rossi was on. And I watched it when... Nikki Glaser was on. Because I adore Nikki Glaser, I adore her, and she only made it through. She only made it through one episode, well, one full episode, and then you know when they voted, she was the first one voted off. So I stopped watching it.
I remember watching the season with Emmett Smith.
I didn't. Yeah.
There have been a bunch of NFL players that have been on it.
It's just that Nikki Glaser, I knew that she was going to do something controversial. Like, she made sex jokes. That's the show that people watch with their kids.
Yeah, that's a family show.
That's a total family show. And she made some really a couple of off-color sex jokes, and she got booted off that show immediately. But I love Nikki Glaser. She's one of my favorites. She's also really, really hot. And so, but yeah, I tried to watch it then, and I only lasted as long as Nikki Glaser was on, then I turned it off. I've tried in the past. I don't see the appeal. And I, like I said, I didn't watch the entire show. I would just watch David Ross's performances. Like, I wouldn't watch the entire show. I get my news about Dancing with the Stars. I stay in touch with keeping up with Dancing with the Stars by talking to Mary Vandeveld.
Oh, is she big Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, person? My God, man.
every year. How many seasons is that show?
It's been on so many years.
I still remember when it first premiered. Like, I was pretty young, but I remember when it first premiered and what a hit it was.
Yeah.
Huge reality show.
Let's see. 804 area code. says, I stopped watching after Adam Lambert lost to whoever. I don't remember who he lost to. Also, major props to Jennifer Hudson, who took a lot of crap from Simon. She appeared at the Crestwood Ice Rink soon after, and look at her now. She believes in herself. Yeah, Adam Lambert. Not a big fan of Adam Lambert. Now he's touring with Queen. He's been touring with Queen for a bunch of years now.
It was Chris Allen.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, this was back in 2009.
Yeah, it sounds about right. 847 area code says, I'm not embarrassed to say that I have become mildly addicted to Bravo's Below Deck shows. Both of them, Below Deck and Below Deck Med. I don't know those. Not familiar. Two of the worst reality shows ever. The Ultimate Merger, a dating show with Donald Trump finding a match for Omarosa. Oh, my God. That doesn't even ring a bell with me. I can't imagine how horrible that must have been. I will admit, I got to tell you, I used to watch The Apprentice, and I watched Celebrity Apprentice.
Well, there was a season with Gary Busey on it, so you have to watch that.
Gary Busey Meatloaf? Come on, man, on the same season?
It's a dream.
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here with Patty Blagojevich as a contestant in The Jungle. I remember that. Best reality show was Joe Millionaire. One season, they couldn't pull it off ever again. Now the reality shows are so scripted, they're unbearable. You remember Joe Millionaire?
Yeah, that was the one where the guy wasn't actually a millionaire.
Right.
That was a weird one. It was a bold strategy.
That was, yeah, because he wasn't a millionaire, Joe Millionaire, and he's wooing all these women who think he's a millionaire, and he's not. What was the one where they had, where everybody in the cast was in on the joke except for one guy? Do you remember that? I don't know what the plot of a reality show, but it was a reality show competition thing, and it was all fake. Like, none of it was real, and only one guy in the cast didn't know. I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember.
Was it the Joe Schmo show?
That's it, I think. How did they describe the Joe Schmo show?
The series takes aim at the silliness of reality TV by having a group of improv actors play reality show stereotypes and throwing some unsuspecting person into the mix who doesn't know the setup.
That's it.
What the hell?
Yeah. I remember watching that one, man. Kurt says Gong Show has to be number one. Well, yeah, I guess it's a reality show.
It's kind of a mix of
a talent, sort of talent show.
Yeah.
Well, I use the word talent loosely. Nick, on Idol, we love James Durbin, the dude with Tourette's. This is what Doc says. Maybe the last reality show I liked was Joe Schmo. Doc, of course, remembers Joe Schmo.
Good Lord. What a guy.
Man.
What a guy.
How about Growing Up Gotti? Oh, how about this? Extreme Makeover Home Edition, where everybody cried every week. So, all right, we got a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the reality shows, good and bad. 312-981-7200, talk and text.
The farmer's market with my so-called girlfriend. She hands me her cell phone, says it's my dad. Man, this ain't my dad. This is a cell phone. I threw it on the ground. You think I'm stupid? I'm not a part of your system. My dad's not a phone. Duh. Some poser hands me cake
out. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday.
Give me a Wildcard Wednesday.
That is any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is absolutely my favorite digital short in SNL history. I threw it on the ground. Who requested The Lonely Island?
That's coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park.
Mike in Old Irving Park. Happy birthday to the ground! I'm an adult! Oh, man. That just destroys me, man, every time. Oh, and he's getting tasered in his butt by Frodo and Deadpool. Oh, yeah. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. We're talking reality shows in honor of this being, today being the 17th anniversary of Kelly Clarkson becoming our first American Idol. Okay, Celebrity Rehab. I watched all of it. Every one of them.
Good old Dr. Drew, right?
Dr. Drew. Watched Celebrity Rehab, all of it, every episode. Watched the Danny Bonaducci meltdown show. I watched the Tom Sizemore meltdown show. All of that stuff. All right, how about Fear? Do you remember Fear on MTV?
Yeah, man.
I loved that show.
Fear was great. Fear was very, very good.
You'd have to go like into dark rooms or supposedly get these challenges. I would watch it. I would not be able to do that.
No.
I'm a wimp, man. I go to horror movies constantly, and I love them. It's my favorite genre, but I can't go into a dark room without freaking out.
I have a phobia, a legitimate phobia of haunted houses.
Yeah.
I can't go near them.
I'm totally with you. I don't know what that says about our personality, considering that, you know, I watch a horror movie a day.
Right. I think it's because of the distance, because we understand, even though we can enjoy a movie and be scared by it, there's still a safe distance that it's just a movie.
Yeah.
And while these haunted houses aren't real, you're just in it. Like, yeah. You're suddenly in the movie, and that's not cool.
Have I ever told you about the story when we went to Disney World? My folks and I went to Disney World in 1972, like the year it opened.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way down there, we saw signs for a haunted house on the side of the road and went, oh, let's go into the haunted house. That'll be fun. So I'm like 8. And so we go, and they're like these, you know how you see like kind of handmade signs on the side of a road that right. says, hey, 1 mile to this. And it was this haunted house. And I talked about this on the air before, and I told the story, and we got a bunch of phone calls from people that said, I went to that haunted house. And it was on the way to Orlando. I can't remember what part of Florida it was in, but it was on the way to Disney World. So we're like, hey, let's stop off at this haunted house. We stop off at the haunted house, and it looks like a regular like house with like a window unit in it. And I'm like, look at the terrifying front porch. How is this? Didn't look scary at all. We walk in, when there's like a little lobby, and we rang a bell, and a woman came out, and she was pale as a ghost with black hair and really creepy looking. And she's like, oh, welcome. And I can't remember the name of the haunted house. But so we go in, and there are different rooms that you would walk into. One room, I remember one room had a black light posters of like tombstones with jokes on them. Like one of them said, what did the hypochondriac say on his gravestone? I told you I was sick. That's my dad joke. So at first it's kind of nothing, you know, and then you go into a room. There's like a monster on the table, or a Frankenstein monster on the table, and everything at this point had been, you know, like fake.
Sure.
But this dude moved and he got up, and then some dude started chasing us, and we were in some blackened hallway, and a guy had a blowhorn, like a blah, you know, the party horn at the rave.
Yeah, yeah.
He had one of those, and it was chasing us, and then it became one of the most terrifying things ever. My mom was traumatized. My aunt was traumatized. I was like in tears practically. And we were outside, like, oh my god! And then you get like a certificate for surviving the haunted house. Like they give you that at the end. And it was the scariest haunted house I've ever been to in my life. Ever in my life. And I've mentioned it before, and we did like some research online a few years back when I was talking about, I mentioned this again. And evidently it was kind of a notorious haunted house. It's closed now, but I think it stayed open through maybe the 80s or something. But it was a real thing. And when I brought this up, lots of people were like, dude, I went to that. And I can't. And then we looked it up online, and evidently it was one of the scariest places that anybody had ever been in their life on many, many occasions, and not just me. So you would have had a heart attack.
Yeah, we went to a random haunted house in like Arizona at a Wild West town.
Yeah.
It was a haunted saloon, and it was basically the worst acid trip you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
There were like moving patterns and all this kind of stuff. I was maybe six. My brother was two.
Oh, God.
And my mom was pregnant, and my dad was at work. So
there it is.
She's pregnant, carrying two children
right.
through this horrifying menagerie.
The haunted saloon. Okay. All right, we're going to break here, and then when we come back, we're going to get back to reality shows. The TV show Fear got us talking about this, about this haunted house and the notorious haunted house in Florida. But the news is coming up right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? That is any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Joe. It's the theme to one of my favorite shows of all time, C-Lab 2021.
Oh, yes. Man, I have not seen that in a long time.
I have... every season on DVD. Oh. It is insane.
All right. Hey, we're back. What was that, my Jimmy Fallon? Hey, we're back! And we're talking about reality shows. And we were talking about Fear before the break on MTV, which was really, I thought it was really cool. I watched it all the time. Next one here mentioned, of course, is Hell's Kitchen. I watched and do watch all of Gordon Ramsay's shows. Every one of them. Currently watching MasterChef. Watch MasterChef Junior. Watch Kitchen Nightmares, where he goes in and goes into the nasty kitchen, eats the terrible food, and then rehabs the building. Watched the F Word. I watched all of them. 24 hours to. I don't even know what it's called. 24 hours to build the thing. Where now he's got like a mobile big bus that he drives with a kitchen in it, and he's got only 24 hours to fix a broken restaurant or a really terrible restaurant. I watch that. I watch all of the Gordon Ramsay shows. So yeah. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here's Donald on WGN. Go ahead, Donald.
Hi. Yeah, there's a show that's on TLC right now called 90 Day Fiancé. And it's all about Americans basically trying to hook up with a foreigner. And there's all kinds of mixes and matches in it. There's like 30-year gaps, and there's like people who seem better matched, and they're from all kinds of countries, Ecuador, India, you name it, South Africa. And it's kind of unfortunate in a way because there's kids involved a lot of times. Uh-huh. And a lot of times these people meet and they get, you know, the woman gets pregnant and all that. And they only got 90 days to get married. And they know each other like 90 days.
Yeah.
And they never met in person and they're already planning the wedding, you know. And they have to decide which country they're going to live in because some of the people don't want to come here. Uh-huh. You know, and this, but a lot of them do, but they've kind of balanced the show so that some of these people here want to go there. And then in the case of there was a 60-year-old who actually moved to Delhi, India, you know, and then to meet with for a 30-year-old Indian guy who didn't want to introduce to the family because he'd be disinherited.
Right.
And, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's sort of tragic. It's sort of a, you know, I'm sure some of it's scripted and they're getting paid, but it's very sad, people sending money over there, and it makes you not want to meet anybody on the Internet or believe anybody.
Well, that's probably a good thing. So it's probably doing public service. I've never heard of it. 90 Day Fiancé. I've never heard of it. I've never seen it. I'm not sure I would be interested in that one. That sounds a little crazy to me. But, yeah, but it's out there. 90 Day Fiancé. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Thank you, Donald. Biggest Loser, never watched it.
Never, you know.
That's the one where
never got it.
You lose a bunch of weight, right?
Yeah.
You get in shape, you lose a bunch of weight. I understand that it's very inspiring to some people.
Yeah, so. If it inspires you. But it seems like a lot of folks from that didn't keep it off, you know?
Yeah.
Which is the problem.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, classic. Classic.
You've been watching the new one?
I have. I don't like it as much as the original. Mm. I like it, you know, but the original was great. The original was great. I mean, it put Bravo on the map.
Yeah.
Because that was before, if I'm not mistaken, that was before Top Chef. Like, I think Queer Eye came on before Top Chef did. Hoarders, man. I used to watch Hoarders all the time. Used to watch Hoarders all the time and get depressed. You have the classic Cheaters. 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 That show is just so ridiculous. And, yeah. But I still, you know, VH1 on weekday mornings has a Cheaters marathon. Or like a Saturday morning, or yeah, I think it's Saturday morning, maybe Friday morning too. They have a Cheaters marathon. And the only reason I know this is because for the past 2 years, when I checked into my hotel room at Crown Plaza for the Flashback convention, you have limited TV in the hotel room. There's not a ton of stuff. So I put on VH1, and for 2 years now straight, I've watched like 3 hours, trying to kill 3 hours before the festivities begin downstairs in the hotel by watching nothing but Cheaters, like back to back to back to back. That's the only reason I know that. Cheaters.
It's a great, like, well, there's nothing else on
yeah.
sort of show.
You ever watch Jail?
Jail?
Yeah. You've never seen Jail?
Just, what is...
Jail is for, because you have the legendary cops. Okay, so you have Cops, which is a legendary show.
Yeah,
one of the granddaddies of all of these shows is Cops. Well, they have Jail because you know in Cops, it stops when they throw the perp in the back of the car.
Yeah,
this begins with them being taken to jail, and it's called simply Jail, and it's magnificent entertainment.
Well, you're just watching them go to jail?
Yeah. Drunk. They're smashing stuff. They're trying to fingerprint them. They have to throw them in solitary until they come down.
Oh, geez.
There's fights in the jail. It takes place in jail. And I think I don't know if they travel around the country like they do with Cops, where they go from, you know, town to town or city to city. Mm-hmm. But I think it might all be in Vegas, which makes it even crazier because it's Vegas. And people are getting arrested all the time in Vegas for doing really stupid things. But yeah, Jail.
I feel like there should be an exclamation point at the end of it.
Well, Jail! The sound effect is cling where they slam. I'm not kidding. It's the slamming of the prison, of the jail, of the cell, the prison cell. Cling.
Does it have its own theme song? Like,
no, I don't. Oh, I don't think so. It doesn't have like not Bad Boys, but it's pretty spectacular entertainment. I got to tell you, I'm trying to figure out. I can't remember what channel it used to be on. It used to be on Channel 50. You know, that's when I think it was on Channel 50 at like, you know, like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. Jail. Fear Factor. Never liked it. Never liked it. Here, eat some bugs. Jump off a building. I'm Joe Rogan, and I'm a jackass.
There was some cool stuff, though. There was one where they had people had to run across a field, and they had train. They were in body, you know, armor or whatever you want to call it. But they had to run across a field while getting attacked by canine units, like German shepherds.
Good Lord,
it was terrifying.
All right, let me ask you this: it was only on for one season. Did you watch the White Rapper show?
Yeah. I saw it either in reruns or like clip on YouTube. People just put full season.
The best. The MC Search rules, by the way. He rules. And MC Search was the host. And it was hilarious. It was only on for one season, and it was all... It was a stupid reality show where all these idiots are living together in a house, and who's going to get a hip-hop rap contract from MC Search from third base. which is a great, by the way, a great hip-hop band, Third Base. But, yeah, I love the White Rapper Show. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And it also helps that I really love MC Search. Like, I truly think he's enormously talented and very, 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 very funny. Let's go to the phones. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, I was watching Love After Lockup.
Love After Lockup.
People in prison send out letters to people, and people who are outside of prisons respond to these letters, and they hook up after they get out.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes they don't follow their parole regulations to get locked up again.
Yeah, sure.
And some of them got married.
There you go. Love After Lockup. All right. Thanks, David.
You're welcome, bud.
That sounds like something you should watch after you watch Jail.
Jail.
You got to see Jail, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to find some clips here. It just looks ridiculous.
It is totally ridiculous. We need to mention some of the ridiculous celebrity dating shows they had on VH1. Well, first of all, you had the Surreal World, or the Surreal Life.
Yeah, the Surreal Life.
That was VH1, where they would throw a bunch of celebrities in a house, and they would have to do challenges. And
wasn't Vern Troyer on that?
I think Vern Troyer was on it once. I know that Brigitte Nielsen and Flava Flav were on a season, because then they hooked up, and then they had their own show called Strange Love. You got Bret Michaels and the Bus Full of Horrors. What was it called?
Rock of Love. Oh my god.
Which was ridiculous. But I watched it. It was ridiculous, but I watched it. And even more ridiculous was the Flavor Flav one. Flavor of Love.
Oh, yeah, Flavor of Love. I mean, that's a classic.
It's totally classic.
It's awesome.
It's totally classic. Pumpkin Spit on New York. Everybody remembers that moment in television history as one of the finest moments in the history of the medium.
That had to be replayed on pretty much every clip show I've ever seen.
Okay, so you got Flavor of Love, okay? And then they spun that off because New York was the woman who... Did she win?
New York?
I think she won, didn't she? Or she didn't find love because she had I Love New York. She had her own show, I Love New York.
Yeah.
This was all when VH1 was just showing nothing but crap, and I watched all of it. They were either showing celebrity rehab stuff or these terrible celebrity love, you know, find love shows that were just awful, and I watched all of it. Because I'm a loser.
Yeah, I was addicted to I Love the 80s and all the I Love series.
Me too.
Best week ever. Yep. But then I'd watch a little bit of Flavor of Love. That usually...
Oh, I watch Flavor of Love. I watch Flavor of Love. Wouldn't miss Flavor of Love. You kidding me? Yeah, that was back in those mid to late 2000s, or the aughts.
Yeah, New York did not win, but she was probably the most well-known.
Right, and that's why they gave her own spinoff.
Yeah.
I Love New York. I remember the first episode of one of the seasons of Flavor of Love. I don't know which season, 3, maybe, I don't know. Within 20 minutes into the episode, this is just him meeting the girls at the house. So it's Flava Flav coming in with the crown on his head and the clock and the whole goblet and all the stuff. And he comes in and he's going to, yeah, boy. And he's going to meet all the ladies. And they're all getting hammered already. Like it's like 15 minutes into the episode. There are at least 4 or 5 women who are fall down, you know, unconscious, drunk, vomiting.
Hell, I would.
And one woman, and I'll never forget this, they had like a, you know, this red carpet lined set of staircase, you know, a big set of staircase going upstairs. And she walks down the steps, and while she's walking down the steps, she's completely bombed. Like, she's loaded. Got a bottle of booze in her hand. She's walking on the steps, defecating on the steps. Not even 20 minutes, not even 20 minutes into the first episode of the season, a woman is crapping on steps.
That's what I call a ratings juggernaut.
See, now that's what, you know, that's fine television, VH1.
You know, let's think about the great television series of all time, you know. Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
All in the Family.
They never crapped on a bunch of steps in those
exactly.
shows.
And that's why they never reached the top.
And it, like, literally wasn't even halfway into the first episode, the very first episode of the season.
Where do you even go from there?
That's what I'm saying. Like, wait a minute. This is how you're 20 minutes into episode one and you've got somebody defecating on steps voluntarily? Nowhere to go but down from there. All right. Reality shows is what we're talking about. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We'll jump back into the conversation after this.
Girls sitting in the back seat, hugging and a kissing with Fred. I said, why don't one of you come up and sit beside me? And this is what the seven girls said.
All together now, one, two, three. Keep your mind on your drive and keep your hands on the wheel. Keep your snoopy eyes on the road ahead. We're having
yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it is Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday. Mm-hmm. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. If you would like to make your request, 312-981-7200. Who requested that one?
Coming to us from Steve.
Steve. Okay, there you go. All right, we're wrapping up the conversation here about reality shows. We got some texts here. 608 area code says, currently I would have to say worst cooks in America on Food Network because it's about people bettering themselves and you can see their confidence grow. I love that show. I love Worst Cooks in America. I love Amber-El. I will watch her do anything. And any of the cooking shows, we're talking about reality shows. Any of the cooking shows, any cooking competition show, I watch it. I love them. I watch it. I love The Great Food Truck Race. I think that's a terrific show. And currently, Worst Cooks in America is really very entertaining. 612 area code says, a positive reality show like that is The Chef's Line on Netflix. It's awesome and very friendly competition. It's out of Australia. 217 area code says, Cheaters and My Fair Brady. Oh, My Fair Brady. There's another VH1 classic. What was her name? She was from Joliet. She was the supermodel who ended up getting married to whoever the hell Peter Brady was, whatever his name is. Oh, I don't remember her name. Her name was Adrian something. She was from Joliet. And My Fair Brady. So it was, is that Mike looking at? Mike Lookinland is Bobby. Peter is, can't remember his damn name. Peter Brady.
Adrian Curry.
Adrian Curry was that's it. That's her. That's the one.
Yeah.
She ended up marrying whoever Peter Brady is.
Peter Knight. Or Christopher Knight.
Christopher Knight.
Peter
right.
Knight.
Yeah, My Fair Brady, another classic VH1 spinoff.
I wonder who was running that channel.
I don't know, man.
A madman.
815 area code said the worst was Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. It was a terrible show. Best was Most Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Jeez.
I don't know if I know Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Oh, you never saw that?
I don't think so.
The one, it's a little bit like Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, I don't like those kind of shows.
Oh, you weren't into it? Yeah.
Like the obstacle course shows where they're swinging and stuff?
These were like average people.
Yeah.
And they were doing it, and it was clearly from Japan. It was weirdly dubbed by comedians.
Oh, right,
and they were wearing kimonos.
Oh, yeah, yes. No, yes. Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I did watch that. That show was very entertaining.
Very strange.
Yeah. Though. As you said it was inspired by the Japanese thing and it was badly dubbed, I was yes.
The bad dubbing was so weird.
I forgot that was the name of it. Well, we mentioned Flavor of Love. You got to mention The Jersey Shore, which is a show that I never got into. Another of the mainstays now. As the Real Housewives, because there's like five different ones. I never watched any of them. Don't watch The Bachelor. Never watched The Bachelor in Paradise or The Bachelorette. Never watched any of those. Not a big Survivor guy. Never really got into it. Simple Life is a show that I hated more than like any show ever, because it was a show where these talentless, spoiled, rotten, rich women, Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, have never done a day of work in their lives, go off and like work on a farm and then event and essentially just make fun of the people who are, you know, who work 10, 12 hour days. I hated it. I hated that show so much. It made me so angry. Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I have never watched any episode of any Kardashian show ever. And then, of course, the granddaddy of pretty much of them all was The Real World on MTV. And I watched that show religiously until the Vegas season. And then after the Vegas season, I stopped watching. Because, you know, by the time they got to the Vegas season, it wasn't any kind of social experiment. It was just a bunch of people, you know, hooking up. That's all it was. And, yeah, so I stopped watching The Real World after that. So, let's see. The Canadian Bill says the greatest show was Superstar USA on the WB. The premise is they were looking for the worst singer in the USA, but the contestants thought it was for the best singer. And you should check out the performance of My Heart Will Go On. I don't know that show. Nick, you would love Below Deck. It's about super yachts and the crazy people that rent them and the crew that serves them. You specifically, for some reason, the 847 area code out there seems to think that that's like right up my alley. 815 area code says it takes a thief on the Discovery Channel. Well, two real life former burglars would get permission to rob people's houses to prove how vulnerable they. Well, that sounds pretty cool. That sounds like Kaz.
Oh. Kaz, you say?
Trucker Rich says Forged in Fire and Knife or Death. Those yeah. are the knife show, the knife shows that we were talking about.
With Goldberg.
Yeah, Goldberg is in. Yeah.
I watched a few episodes. Some of it's on Hulu. It was pretty good.
Listen, the reviews that we got from listeners when we talked about that, you know, we talked about that show in particular got mentioned were glowing.
Yeah. I do have some of that audio of the My Heart Will Go On.
Oh, let's hear that. Let's close out this topic with this.
Once more, you open the door, and you're here in my heart. My heart will go on and on.
Good Lord.
You know, I will say, with some coaching, she could probably be pretty good.
Yeah.
If someone actually sat her down, but...
I am now imagining how many cats are freaking out in people's houses right now. People who have their radio on at 3:30 in the morning, and their cats heard that and just have now gone nuts. All right, let's break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some very odd jobs that don't exist anymore, and there were some weird ones out there. We'll jump into that right after we break here for the news, which is next.
Pumping up, pumping iron. Pumping up, it really feels like flying. Coming up, just like the lion.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Who was that requested by?
So that was requested by Harold, the theme from Pumping Iron, and that's in honor of Franco Colombo, who passed away.
He did?
Yeah, he drowned. He had a heart. He was in Sardinia, Italy, and he was swimming, and he had a heart attack in the water.
Oh, my God. When did this happen?
This is on August 31st.
Wow.
And Arnold, and naturally, Arnold Schwarzenegger was devastated because they were very, very
Oh,
close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't hear anything about that.
Yeah, it kind of flew a little under the radar.
Oh, man.
But,
How
yeah.
old was he?
He was, let's see.
Got to be in his 70s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 78.
78 years old. Oh, man. Wow. I didn't hear about that. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it is Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday.
And also coming up is Know Your Onion. You got to know your onion. You don't know your onion, you don't know nothing. And you also don't know not to use a double negative. Know Your Onion is this. Tom is your host, and he will read you some news headlines. And you have to decide whether they are real news headlines or they're from The Onion, which is a satirical newspaper that makes up funny fake news. With the news being as insane as it is now in the real world, sometimes it's difficult to tell whether it's a real headline or a onion. So we'll take two different contestants, play two rounds, play one round each with them, and no one goes home empty-handed. I just want you to know that right now. So Know Your Onion. That's coming up after the 4:30 news. All right. So, there are some jobs that don't exist anymore simply because a lot of times it's technology that eliminates jobs. And sometimes times move on and there's no need for certain jobs. But there have been some very strange jobs in the past that don't exist anymore. And this is from Business Insider. They say jobs and industries come and go. In 2014, The Economist predicted that robots are going to replace telemarketers, accountants, and retail workers. And Bill Gates has said that software bots will take even more jobs. This isn't the first time the whole swaths of labor market had gone extinct. The Industrial Revolution did away with gigs that your great-great-grandparents might have had, and that sound preposterous today. Using the Bureau of Labor Statistics occupational classification list from 1850 and some research, we found some several bizarre and now extinct occupations that were just once part of daily life. So we want to hear from you guys. What jobs don't exist anymore? Did you ever have a job that no longer is a thing? 312-981-7200. I was a paper boy. There aren't paper boys anymore, are there?
No, not really. You just kind of got a guy that drives around in his van.
Down by the river? Yeah, I was a paper boy and used to push the big giant wooden cart down the middle of the street at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Big giant wooden cart with two handles and squeaky wheels. And I don't know how people just didn't wake up as I was walking through the neighborhood. This thing rolling down the middle of the street. But the newspaper delivery place that I worked out of was in a storefront on Lincoln Avenue, just south of about two blocks south of Irving. I want to say near school. So like at Lincoln and school, and it was like an empty storefront, just an empty storefront. We would go in, and on Sundays we'd have to stuff the papers, and then we'd wrap them up, and then go out and do our route, and then come back and get some money, and then we'd go to the Lincoln restaurant, which no longer exists on Irving and Lincoln. So that was like a thing that I did. And that doesn't work. They don't have that anymore.
No, it's usually just a guy in a car. I see him usually in the morning when I'm walking up to my apartment. Sometimes if he's running a little bit behind, tossing my son,
I think it's encouraging. I will tell you this. I think it's encouraging that people still get an actual newspaper.
Yeah, I love it.
Because most people don't get newspapers. Most people get their news from the internet. Or they just go online to, ChicagoSunTimes.com or ChicagoTribune.com or wherever to get their stories, or subscribe to the New York Times online. But I kind of like the fact that there are actual people who are still delivering papers, and there are actual physical newspapers that people are holding in their hand and reading. My dad gets a newspaper every day. Goes like to the gas station every morning, gets a newspaper. Grabs a cup of coffee, gets a newspaper. But yeah, I used to deliver papers. And I think that's the only job that I've ever had that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, because people that make burgers at McDonald's still make burgers at McDonald's. I had that job. People who stock shelves at Jewel or manage the dairy section at Jewel, people have that. That's still a job. All the other jobs, reviewing movies, editing magazines, people still do that. Having a radio show, that's still a thing. Thank God. So I've only had one job that I guess doesn't really exist anymore, and that's newspaper deliverer boy, newspaper boy. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And then we're going to go back to some very strange ones, though. I mean, these are just, you know, like delivering papers is you know, it just people just don't do it anymore. But that's not a weird job. You know, you're delivering a newspaper in the morning to someone's house. You get some money for it. You get a tip. That makes sense. But some of the jobs in this article from the Business Insider are completely nuts. Just really, really weird. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. We got some people who are calling in. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, man. How you doing, man?
Right.
I haven't talked to you for quite some time.
All right. What's up?
Well, the horse-drawn carriages, you know, that give, like, wedding parties and little tours around the square in Woodstock. Okay. I used to, like, kind of stand, I don't know, 30 yards behind, and when the horse would do his stuff, I'd take care of it.
Oh, so you would shovel it?
Yeah, of course.
They would make you walk behind the horse? Because
way behind the horse, because that's before they put the horse bags on.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, because the handsome cabs had that pouch for the
now they do, but they didn't when I was doing it.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, that's quite a job, Chris.
You know, 9 times out of 10, I'd end up throwing it in, like, wherever there were bushes or, you know, whatever. I just toss it in there.
That's
because it, you know, decomposed and whatnot.
Right.
But still, that's a job that does not exist anymore.
All right, Chris. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Thank
all
you,
right,
horse
buddy, take care. There you go. Shoveling horse poop. Do they or do they not have hansom cabs downtown anymore? They don't, do they? The horse-drawn carriages. I mean, I saw one on the street not too long ago, and I had not seen one in downtown Chicago for years. And then we were in the car downtown, and I was like, wait a minute, why is there a hansom cab? Why is there a horse-drawn carriage? I thought that they were not a thing anymore in downtown Chicago. Because they used to be, obviously, they used to be huge. They were everywhere downtown, and one of the stations was right by Water Tower. Right by the Water Tower. That's where all the horses and they would gather. That was where they would all line up, was right at the Water Tower. They're not there anymore, and I don't see them.
Well, you still, because I used to have a lot of my classes for Loyola downtown, because they have the downtown campus right by Water Tower.
Yeah.
And I would see them intermittently, usually closer to holiday time.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But they used to be around all the time. It was a big business in the city. A big, big business in the city. And like I said, lined up at Water Tower. So, let's see. Here is Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
Hey, you were talking about jobs that are extinct.
Yeah.
For 2 summers when I was in high school, I was a gas station attendant for Shell Oil.
Yeah, there you go. Right there. Gas station attendants. Yep. No more.
One of the greatest jobs in the world. It's amazing what you would see.
it's amazing. You know, still one of my favorite moments. One of my favorite moments in Back to the Future was when he goes back for the first time and he sees the gas station and all the attendants run out and start servicing the car. He's just like,
"We have to do that."
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, that's true. No more gas station attendants. That's right.
Yeah. No more.
Yeah. So. Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Hey, you have a great day.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Aren't there some states where it is illegal to, like New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken?
I think you're right. I don't know if specifically New Jersey, but I know that there are some states that still have to have a gas station attendant.
You cannot service yourself for gas.
Right. But, man, they would come out, they would check your oil.
Yeah.
They would do your windshields.
What a different time.
Yeah. That's why that moment, and you know, why that moment in Back to the Future is so funny. Back to the Future is 35 years old. And it was still like Marty McFly being completely shocked that somebody, that like a group of guys came out to service the car. You know, fill up all the liquids and, you know, your windshield washer solvent and your oil and all that stuff. Fill up your tires. I asked my dad, because I don't drive, so I asked my dad what they charge for air now at a gas station. Do you know how much they charge for air now?
It's been a while since I had my car, because I sold it a year ago. But I think it was like, I think I maybe put in $1.50.
It's like $1.50.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to sound like old man Swanson here, but I remember when it was free.
Did you get your wedges for free,
too? You would go and you'd get gas and you could fill up your tires for free. It was air for free. And then they started, you know, it started to cost like a dime or a quarter. When I heard it was $1.50, I was like, are you kidding me? Man. All right. All right. We got a break here, and we're going to get back to this. We got some really crazy jobs here to talk about that no longer exist. And if you ever had a job or remembering jobs that that don't apply anymore, that aren't around, 312-981-7200. Yes. Wham. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Coming up at 6, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Who requested the wham?
Coming to us from Ike.
Ike. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about, there's an article here from Business Insider, which is linked up on our Facebook page. You should like us on Facebook, be a part of it, because what's happening on the show is always happening on the page. If we're talking about a specific article, it's always there. So you can check it out. And that's facebook.com/NickDShow. So like us right now, facebook.com/NickDShow. Follow us and read it. And it's all about some really crazy jobs that existed some time ago but don't exist anymore. And we got a bunch of texts coming in about jobs that don't exist anymore. And here's Deborah on WGN. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, 71 years ago, when I was 16, during the summer, off from school, I went to an employment agency, which they no longer have. The receptionist had a little file box with all of the employers' cards on them with the jobs being advertised. So she handed me one for the New York handkerchief factory, and I accepted that job, and it was to fold handkerchiefs, men's handkerchiefs.
To fold men's handkerchiefs?
Yes.
Boy, that, that sounds really boring.
Well, since it was just during the summer from school, I had no objection, and that was my very first job.
Wow.
And, yes, and I was making 30 cents an hour.
30 cents an hour for folding handkerchiefs?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's a job that doesn't exist anymore, I would imagine.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Woof. You know what minimum wage was when I started at McDonald's? When I for my first like job?
Hit me.
3 1/4.
Damn. What was I making? I didn't actually have a minimum wage job until I was in college because I made my money as a soccer referee.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get paid an astronomical amount of money.
To be a soccer referee?
Yeah, for how old I was. I started when I was 12, and I was a line judge. I was an assistant referee, and I would get paid $20 a game.
Wow.
And I would do about 3 to 4 games a weekend. So wow. It was awesome.
Let's see, 630 area code says, back in the day, they had a man who would deliver a block of ice to people's homes for their ice boxes. Sure, man, there's a Three Stooges, an epic Three Stooges short dedicated to that. That's why some people, older people, still call the refrigerator the icebox.
I always thought it was a different thing. Like, if someone said icebox, like, there was a separate thing that they used just, like...
You mean now?
Yeah, now.
No, refrigerators is what they're referring to.
Yeah. That's the whole reason that Crystal Lake, Illinois kind of sprung up, is because they would use the lake. It was crystal clear. They would use it for ice.
815 area code says, I used to sell records and tapes at Junior's Music Shop. There's not too many of those around anymore. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and we were talking a little bit earlier when I was talking with the McMurray man. We were talking about video stores. and how many friends that I have that worked at video stores. Like Colin, Eric both worked at video stores. Real shocker.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. 773 air code says, I worked at the Twin Drive-In as a gatekeeper. As the gatekeeper.
Probably to make sure no one was trying, was just driving on through, right?
Driving through or maybe checking trunks for people who would hide in the trunk.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that would make sense that that would happen.
Oh, no, that was a thing.
Just get in the trunk of the car.
Yeah, you get three, four people in the trunk of the car. So you don't have to pay. And then when you get into the drive-in, you find a secluded spot, open up the trunk, everybody piles out. No, that was a thing.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Of course it would.
815 area code, walking meter readers. Yeah, that's true. They'd just go out in the back and scream. They'd be in your backyard yelling, gas man! I'm not kidding. It would be unscheduled. And there would be people that would walk around and have to read your meter. They would scream until you came down.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm totally serious. Gas man!
You know, like, that sounds awful.
Yeah. 816 area code. Used to be no self-service shoes. There was always a real person helping in sizing and getting your size from, quote-unquote, the back. Maybe a handful still exist. I think there are some shoe stores that pride themselves on being full service now.
When I believe it or not, Vans. If you go to Vans store, because I almost exclusively wear Vans sneakers.
Yeah.
You go up and look yourself, but then the attendant comes up and says, "Oh, what do you want to look at?"
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You don't like just grab it off the shelf. It's not like a Payless, you know.
773 Erica says, "Yeah, yes, the air machines at the gas station have card readers for your debit card now. That's insane." To use my debit card to fill up my tires. All right, let's go to some of these. So again, from Business Insider, these go back in time. They used the Bureau of Labor Statistics occupational classification list from 1850 and a bunch of research and found some really bizarre and now extinct occupations. How about this one? The knocker up or the knocker upper. The knocker up. Is essentially someone who acted as a human alarm clock. The knocker up. How did people get up for work before alarm clocks? Easy. They hired a knocker up to tap on or shoot peas at their windows at an appointed time. This profession became popular in Britain and Ireland in the early 19th century, continuing well into the Industrial Revolution. According to the BBC, some areas in industrial Britain still had a couple of knocker-uppers as late as the 70s. A knocker-upper, usually carried a bamboo stick, sometimes several feet long, to tap on high-up windows waking workers. The task was mostly performed by older men and women as a way of making extra cash. But who woke the knocker-ups? They were reportedly nocturnal to begin with. Richard Jones, an author, told the BBC, the knocker-uppers were night owls and slept during the day instead, waking at 4 in the afternoon. Geez, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I wonder what that must be like.
We should be outside right now knocking on people's windows.
Yeah, let's go wake up Steve. You think Steve Cochran's awake yet?
I think he's awake already. I would bet money that he's awake already. Anybody who is on the morning show is awake already. Trust me.
All right, Bill and Wendy it is.
Okay, there it is. Let's wake them up. Let's wake up J-Dub, see what happens. All right, now, this one was mentioned in a text, pin setter. Before mechanical pin setters were invented in 1936, boys were hired to set up bowling pins after they were knocked down. They were called pin setters. Luckily, when mechanical pin setters made bowling more efficient by reducing wait times between turns, attendants were still kept around to clean the machines and fix any jams before more advanced machines were patented. Is it Southport Lanes that still has pin setters?
I think that would be the one, because that's...
Because Lucky Strike, I think, is automatic.
Lucky Strike's automatic. But Waveland Bowl is automatic.
Oh, yeah. Waveland Bowl's been on. But, I mean, I'm talking about these niche bar slash, you know what I mean? Like the hipster bar bowling alleys. Like Lucky Strike, particularly Lucky Strike in Southport Lanes.
Yeah, Southport Lanes, I want to say yes, but I've never had the chance to go.
Oh, you've never been there?
No, I've never had the chance, but I'm pretty sure they advertise that.
Well, they used to. I haven't been to a bowling alley in years, nor have I been to a bar in a long time. And I loved Southport Lanes. We used to bowl there all the time, and they had pin setters. And we thought it was really cool. But I don't know if they've changed that, because it's been years since I've been there. But I think there are some old-fashioned places that still have pin setters.
773 says, yes, Southport has the pin boys.
They still have the pin setters. I think that's pretty cool, actually. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you commit to the idea. You commit to the craft.
Yeah. So pin setters do exist, not as much as they used to, obviously. So, all right, we're going to break here, and when we come back, we've got more really weird old jobs that don't exist anymore, and just in general, maybe not weird jobs, but jobs that don't exist. 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and we'll jump back into it right after we break for the news, which is next.
Old Ruby, don't take your love to town. It wasn't me that started that old crazy Asian war, but I was proud to go into my patriotic shore.
Ah. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. Give me a Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Kenny Rogers and his beard?
That's coming to us from Mr. B.
All right, Mr. B, Kenny Rogers and his beard and Ruby. And his chicken.
The chicken.
His chicken roasters. The man makes a pretty good bird. It's a... all right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Hey, coming up after the 4:30 news, Tom's getting all ready. We're going to play a round each with two people, a round of Know Your Onion. That's after the 4:30 news. Know Your Onion is when you call in, and we'll play around with the first two people separately that call in. And the idea is Tom's going to read you a newspaper headline, and you have to guess whether it is a real headline or a headline from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And as we've said many times before, things have gotten really, really ridiculous and weird in the real world. So it's hard sometimes to tell a real news headline from an Onion news headline. You won't go home empty-handed. We'll get another round of that coming up, Know Your Onion, after the 4:30 news. All right. So we are talking about jobs that no longer exist. And some of them are very, very strange, and they date back years and years and years ago, where they are really, really just strange jobs. And we want to hear from you guys if you know of any jobs that don't exist anymore, or maybe you had a job that no longer exists. 312-981-7200. So how about this? Badger. A badger. Back when the farmer's market was just the market, people called badgers would buy produce from the farmer, bring it to the market, and sell it to the customer. While people still sell goods in open-air markets all over the world, the term badger was more popular in Britain. It was still in use in America up until around the Civil War. Linguists think the phrase badger someone came from their relentless salesmanship. Either that or the occupation derives from bagger, as someone who carries a bag. A badger. That's interesting. How about this? A leech collector. A leech collector. Back when medicine was in its let's just bleed the patient phase, people called leech collectors would cull leeches from the ground with animal legs and sell them to doctors. And apparently they sold some to Willem Dafoe for speed too. This practice was common in the 18th and 19th centuries in both Britain and America. Bloodletting via leeches was thought to release the patient of bad humors that made them sick. To attract leeches from swampy water, leech collectors would lead old horses into the water and then pick off the fresh leeches that would fix themselves onto their skin. If they didn't have any horses, they would simply use their own legs. Oh my God! That's ridiculous. Those poor horses. But then they would use their own legs if they didn't have horses. Leech collector. That sounds like a fantastic job. I wonder if there's any vacation You get any vacation time when you're a leech collector? What about insurance? You're going to have to need health insurance if you're a leech collector. You're going to be in the hospital every other week with leeches attached to your face. That's insane. That's insane. And sell them to doctors. Yeah, Steve Martin from Saturday Night Live. The character he played in Saturday Night Live. It was all about bloodletting. Let's see. Here's Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Do you remember the knife sharpener?
Yeah, the guy would come down the street, ring a bell.
Yep.
And
yep.
you would
ding, 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 yep. In the middle of the morning, and like 5 in the morning. And now imagine that today, you running down the street with a bunch of large knives in your hand.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's like, I remember that. I remember that. You know what? I think there is still a few people who do that, Robert. If I'm not mistaken, there is still at least one guy in the Chicagoland area or in one of the suburbs that is still a knife sharpener. Like, he still has the cart, he still rings the bell, and people run outside with their knives, and this guy sharpens them.
Well, my mom lives in Oak Park, and I know he still goes once in a while. You can hear him in Oak Park.
Oh, okay.
And I'm telling you, with that stone that he uses,
yeah,
those knives get really nicely sharp.
Oh, they do. No. That's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. They do. But, yeah, that was a real thing. Some guy walking through your neighborhood, ringing a bell, you run outside with your knife, and he sharpens it for you. That's
yeah. It sounds crazy. All right, have a great night.
All right, Robert, take care, buddy. Yeah, that's a real thing, Tom. I know you probably have you ever heard of the guy who walks through the neighborhood ringing the bell, people run outside with their knives?
No.
It's a knife sharpener.
The closest thing I had to that was the high school students who got shanghaied into selling Cutco knives.
Oh, no. This guy, your personal knives. Like, when you hear the bell, you're like, oh, the knife guy. And you grab your favorite knife, and you run outside with it, give it to Knife Man. He sharpens it beautifully, and you pay him. And this was a common job and a common practice.
Well, it sounds like it's time to bring that back.
Well, we were just saying. I think there are a couple of guys who still do that, because some people, you know, really believe that that's the best way to sharpen a knife. Like, these guys with their stones are the best.
Got like a whetstone.
Yeah,
you know?
Who really know how to sharpen knives, like Rambo.
I mean,
by the way, that new Rambo movie looks ridiculous.
I know. Isn't it great?
No.
Come on.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Because the only one I don't like is the third one, is the one in Afghanistan.
Is that the one where it's dedicated to the Mujahideen?
Yes.
Yeah, that didn't age well.
I don't like that one. I like the last one, which was insane, where he killed like 8,000 people.
Yeah, that was in Burma.
In the most bloody, it was the most bloody of any of the Rambo movies.
Oh, no doubt.
And I like that one. So I guess I should be looking forward to this one, considering I think Rambo First Blood Part 2 is pretty awesome.
He's going to take on the cartel this time.
Yeah. And First Blood is my favorite Stallone movie.
I mean.
But the thing about, like I've said this before, First Blood is like a legitimately good movie.
Yeah.
The other Rambo movies are ridiculous, but fun and good.
Yeah.
But like, First Blood is good. Like, a really, really good movie. But yeah, so Rambo, he can sharpen knives. That maybe if he needs a job after whatever he does in this movie, he can start ringing bells outside. You wake up, you walk outside with your favorite knife, and Stallone's down there.
Yeah, I'm going to sharpen your knife for you.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a shot.
Or he can just become a leech collector.
Just dip into different pools around.
Well, he doesn't. He's Rambo.
Yeah.
Guy sews up his own arm.
Oh, man. Yeah. Imagine Rambo going around selling leeches to
people. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if in that first Rambo movie he didn't have a few leeches stuck to him. Were there any leech scenes in the first Blood?
I feel like there were leech scenes in the sequels.
Didn't they put leeches on him when he was like attached to the?
Yeah, they put him in a pool of leeches.
That's right. I knew there were leeches involved in the Rambo movie. And we're connecting two jobs now that Rambo could have. He could be a leech collector and a knife sharpener. He's got those skills.
He's a leech collecting knife sharpener.
That's exactly right.
Two birds with one stone.
Oh, man, what a resume. Yeah. So if anybody knows of any knife sharpeners that you guys in your suburb or in your neighborhood, is there a dude running around ringing bells with a cart sharpening your knives? We'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, talk or text. How about this one? Resurrectionist. Resurrectionist. In a similarly unsavory case of early medicine, resurrectionists would dig corpses out of the graveyards and sell them to medical schools. The practice became especially popular in Britain. Why are all of these things popular in Britain? Can you explain?
There are a lot of weird things that people, we used to have, you know, street urchins.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, they're adorable, though.
They can sing.
I've seen Oliver Twist.
Well, it's kind of weird. A lot of these jobs are kind of these Dickensian sort of
no kidding.
Oddities.
A resurrectionist digs corpses out of graveyards and sells them to medical schools.
Well, have you ever heard the story of Burke and Hare?
Oh, yeah. They made a movie out of it.
That they did.
It wasn't good, but they made a movie out of it. Simon Pegg, John Landis directed it.
A very classic kind of Scottish tale of guys who used to murder people so they could be resurrected.
I was really looking forward to that movie, too. Because it was Simon Pegg and who?
It was Andy Serkis.
Right, Andy Serkis. That's right. That should have been a good movie.
It should have been.
But it wasn't.
Nope.
Naturally, resurrectionists weren't well regarded by British society, who preferred to call them body snatchers. Well, that's where that term comes from. Eventually, the British government had enough of bodies being stolen from cemeteries everywhere, so they let doctors have access to their workhouse dead, the deceased people who lived in workhouses for the poor. That's still creepy.
I mean, it was a great way to make money. You can make a ton of money doing that.
You speak from experience? What the...
Listen, I will not confirm nor deny
that you're a body snatcher.
I prefer resurrectionist.
Sorry. Okay. All right. Let's stop here for some weather, and then we'll talk about some more jobs that are weird and don't exist anymore. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Then after the 4:30 news, another edition of Know Your Onion. Get ready to play.
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's too fat for me. She's too fat for me. Much too fat for me. Oh, I'm the one you can have her. She's too fat for me. She's too fat, she's too fat, she's too fat for me. She's a twosome, she's a foursome. If she'd lose some.
Yeah. It's a pretty politically correct song now. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Rasco. Or sorry, pardon me, that's actually Dino. Dino requested
Dino.
That one.
Okay.
Frankie Yankovic.
That's right, Frankie Yankovic, who is Weird Al's... He's related to Weird Al. Maybe his father? Or his uncle? I know he's related to Weird Al.
He is not. He is apparently not related to Al Yankovic, although the two have collaborated.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they both play polka.
Yeah, that seems a little bit too convenient. But
yeah.
C'est la vie.
Okay. All right. Hey, we are talking about jobs that no longer exist. Some of them very, very weird, thanks to this article that we're reading, like leech collector and resurrectionist. So, also just some regular jobs that people had that don't exist. 847 area code says plug. This is from a text. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Plug and cord PBX switchboard operators. Oh yeah, the switchboard operator, one ringy dingy, that whole thing. I still remember the labor and delivery room extensions at the then Boston Lying in Maternity Hospital. The cord would light up with the incoming call, and you would plug it into the corresponding room number hole. Help me get through college. Tom from Bartlett says the kid that used to sort the 16-ounce pop bottles at the Jewels. Hey, I was one of those kids. You had to sort them out by vendors and cigarette butts in the bottles. You name it, would be a messy, crappy job. It was. It was a terrible job. And also, you had to wear like steel gloves because you didn't want to reach into the cart if there was broken glass and you would slice your hand wide open. And you had to sort them by vendor. So, like, all the Pepsi products had to be in the Pepsi product area, Coke, so on and so forth. People would drop off their returnable bottles, the 16-ounce returnable bottles, in 8-packs. Usually they would have 8-packs. And they would drop them off at the service desk, and there would be a big metal cart. that you would fill up, and when they were full, they would call you up to the service desk and say, you got to bring an empty cart. The bottles are full. Then you'd bring them down, you'd bring them out, put the empty cart in, and, well, at the Jewel that I worked at, we had a basement where all of our stock was. You have to get in the elevator, go down to the basement, and then sort them all out.
My God.
Pain in the ass, I'm telling you.
I imagine.
And then they started to phase out the returnable bottles.
Mm-hmm.
So the job got a little bit smaller and smaller until it didn't exist anymore. But when I first started working at Jewel, for about the first 3 years, that was a job. Like a me, and
that was a Nick job.
Even 3 or 4, no, not just Nick, but everybody. Yeah. All the guys, all the clerks, and service clerks. I'm sorry, service clerks. That's when you're a facer. When you start out as a service clerk, you're a facer and you do the bottles. Because if you're a clerk, you can tell other people to do things. And I did that all the time. So clean up an aisle 4. All right, I'll tell the service clerk to do it. What would you think would be the hardest thing to clean up? Like something busts at the Jewels.
Something busts.
And you got to clean it up. What do you think is the worst?
I want to say not liquid based. I mean, eggs? Like if someone dropped a carton of eggs?
No, not bad.
Not too bad?
Not bad. You get a couple of, this is how you clean up busted eggs. First of all, you get rid of the shells. Get rid of the shells first. Throw them out. And you get two, this is how you cleaned up a lot of stuff at the Jewels when there was something broken. You would take two flaps from a cardboard box, cut them off with your razor, with your cutter, and scoop them together and pick up the eggs and drop them into the... So you would have, like, it's almost like, you know, you got two dustpans, and you're scraping them together, boom. So that's not bad. Then you wipe it down.
Okay.
The worst is liquid soap of any kind or liquid laundry detergent.
Yeah.
Liquid laundry detergent is the worst because it foams up. You try to clean it. It spreads out all over the place. You can't use water.
Yeah,
because
is it aquaphobic or?
Yeah.
It doesn't want to mix.
Well, if you add water to it, you're going to have suds all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, no, those were the biggest. And I remember, oh, my God, I remember one time because the laundry detergent aisle was right in front of the second part of my dairy department where the milk and the eggs and the cottage cheese were. And somebody was turning around with like burning rubber with their shopping cart and smashed into an aisle stack of Era. An entire aisle stack. And boom, it went down and it took 4 of us. I had to call people up. I'm like, I can't do this alone.
Yeah.
And it took us like an hour and a half to even get it remotely non-slippery. And then it's slippery for a long time. So you have to put the signs out, the cones out, mm-hmm. make sure nobody breaks their neck. But I'll never forget that. It was like slow motion. I'll never forget it. It was like, I'm not kidding. It was like 30 years ago when this happened. And this guy was peeling around the corner. Boom. And I just watched it all. I was like, no. It was like slow motion, trying to get to the aisle stack and pull it back so it didn't. But they all, boom.
That's nightmarish.
And the ones that survived, like the plastic bottles that did survive, covered in detergent. Had to go downstairs and rinse them off, which took 9 hours.
Yeah. Oh.
Nightmare. Nightmare. It was fun working at Jewel. Now, for the most part, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I will say this. Working at Jewel is a great part-time job for somebody who is in high school or going to college. You get full benefits, you get vacation, and you get a good hourly wage.
They take care of you.
They did, man. And they had a great... When I was there, they had a really great union. And I was with them for 11 years. I stayed with them long after I dropped out of college. My only source of income was Jewel for a long period of time throughout almost all the 80s. So here's Edwin on WGN. Hey, Edwin.
Yeah, hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, I thought of a job you don't see any longer from the Marshall Fields on State Street, a elevator operator.
Ah, yes.
Fifth floor, Lars Ray, step out, please.
Yes, yes, the elevator operator. No longer my favorite elevator operator of all time. Tom, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The elevator operator in Barton Fink.
Yeah.
My favorite elevator operator of all time.
Great elevator operator.
Unbelievable. Creepy and awesome. Yeah, elevator operators, no more. All right, Edwin, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye. Man. Does anybody know, are there elevator operators anywhere? I would imagine that there's some buildings that still have them.
In fancy hotels,
I would imagine.
But they would probably also function similarly to a bellhop. They might help out with moving your stuff. But I don't think I could be an elevator operator. Too many ups and downs.
Oh, my God. As somebody had their Henny Youngman juice this morning.
All right.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
I couldn't be an elevator operator because I don't like elevators.
They freak you out?
Yes, they do. And these elevators in this building freak me out. Because sometimes the doors stay open way too long. Like, you get in, you press the button, and then you're like...
They're of a special breed.
Is this thing going to move? And then sometimes the doors go, hue, like they're going to close, and they don't for like 35 seconds.
My buddy's just moved out of an apartment up in Rogers Park that has an elevator, but it's the kind that still has the grate.
Yeah.
Those things are terrifying.
Well, we used to have that at the Jewels, but our grate did not go across.
It came down.
It came down.
It was a freight elevator.
Yeah, it was a big freight elevator, and we would bring pallets down and, yeah. Boy, I'm just reliving all of the fun at Jewel this morning. You know what was really when I was no longer a service clerk and they made me a clerk, they sometimes would call people up to bag because I didn't work up front. I was never a checker or a bagger. I was always in the back in the grocery department or dairy department or stuff like that. So they would call up some of the people because they were understaffed or somebody would call in sick. And every time I went up, because I hated bagging groceries, I hated it. So every time I would go up, I would tell the person who was at the express line, move. I would tell the bagger at the express line, move. And then I would bag two items, leave. I'd go back. I did that every single time. But I would tell the person at the express line, because I'm not bagging more than three groceries. What, are you kidding me? I was a jerk. All right. Let's break here. We've got the news coming up. But we now are opening up the phone lines for Know Your Onion. If you can tell the difference between real news headlines and onion news headlines, get in here now. The first two people through at 312-981-7200 will be our two contestants. They play a round each. So call now if you want to play Know Your Onion. First two people through, 312-981-7200. It'll be coming up after the news, which is next.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I...
So, do you know what I think of whenever I hear this song?
Tell me.
The cafeteria scene in Animal House where John Belushi is shoving all the food into his face.
I'm a zit.
Yep.
Get it?
That whole scene where he's like walking down the cafeteria line, just shoving stuff into his mouth. That beautiful song is playing. So who requested that?
It's coming to us from Rasco.
All right, Rasco. Okay. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday is going to be wrapping up.
Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday.
But we'll do it again next week. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. We're going to get back to wrap up the show and our talk of like jobs that don't exist anymore and some really strange ones at that. But it is time now to Know Your Onion. This is where Tom is your host, and he will read you news headlines, and you have to decide whether it's a real news headline or an onion headline, and prizes will be handed out. So let's begin and get the 60,000 fans in the room.
It's time to Know Your Onion.
Fantastic. I like the band, too. The band, quite talented.
Yeah.
All right.
Four guys all playing, keyboards.
It's fantastic. All right. So we are here, and it's Know Your Onion. Tom's going to read you some news headlines. And again, you got to get the best of five. So you need three in order to be a winner. So let's get our first contestant in here. Here's Carrie in Oak Park on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
It's Jerry.
Oh, hi,
and,
Jerry.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning. Do you know what the onion is?
Well, I used to read it when it was in print.
Yeah.
It's not in print, but apparently it's online now, huh?
Oh, yeah. The website's great. And it's still as funny as ever. So you just have to tell the difference between a real headline and a onion headline, Carrie.
Okay.
Jerry. So here we go. Go ahead. Tom.
All right. Let's get a little music going here. Okay. Jerry, your first headline. Horse joins owner on a flight from Chicago as a service animal. Is that real or is that the onion?
A horse is a service animal.
Yes, a horse joins an owner joins its owner on a flight from Chicago as a service animal. Real or the onion?
Well, I'm going to say it's so bizarre it's got to be real.
Let's see.
Of course it's real.
Very nice.
Of course it's real. Of course someone has a horse on the plane. All right.
Miniature horse.
All right, Jerry, good job. You got to get two more. You get two more, you win. Go ahead, Tom.
All right, here's your next one. Boston Market giving lucky fan 1-ton tub of their favorite side dish. Is that real or is that the onion?
Boston Market giving... Say it again.
So Boston Market is giving one lucky fan a 1-ton tub of their favorite side dish. Is that real or is that the onion?
1 ton. Well, I'll say it's real again.
Let's see.
Shung-win.
Very
that's
good.
That's real?
Yep, you can win a 1-ton tub of your favorite Boston Market side dish.
And where the hell are you going to store it?
In your 1-ton house.
Yeah, all right. All right, good job, Jerry. You get this next one right, and you're a winner.
Okay, your next headline. Democrats launch a new Listen Up Hayseeds campaign to connect with rural voters. Is that real or is that the onion?
Well, I'll go onion.
Let's find out.
Excellent!
That's got, wow. It's got onion written all over it. That is hilarious. Jerry, congratulations.
Thank you.
You win, buddy. You got yourself a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. And, Jerry, you got to hang on, okay?
Okay, I got a Malnati's 4 blocks from me.
There you go. I got one right across the street from my apartment. It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy good. All right, Jerry, there you go. Hang on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Literally about 800 feet. From my front door.
I can't tell you how excited we got when we were teenagers and we got our first Lou Malnati's in Crystal Lake.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was nice. It's right across the street. And it's in the same complex as a Lyft headquarters, a coffee shop, and a Potbelly's all in one. And a Verizon store all in one.
Great.
All in one.
So you can eat and get a phone.
I get everything. That's where I got my phone when they roped me into when the used car salesmen that now sell phones. I was right there, and I stopped at Potbelly's afterwards.
To think about what you've done.
That's exactly right. Okay. All right, let's go to our next contestant. It's Betty in Oak Park. What's going on in Oak Park this morning? Betty, do you know Jerry?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I've never heard of him.
Okay.
We do have a new knife sharpener that still comes around in Oak Park.
Oak Park got mentioned. When we were talking about it before, somebody said that there is still a knife sharpener that walks around in Oak Park. That's pretty funny.
He rides a bicycle, and he's got the stone.
He's got the stone.
He pedals the bike.
And he rings the bell, you come on out. All right. Okay. Betty, you familiar with The Onion?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Here we go. You have to tell the difference between a real news headline and a weird, fake, funny news headline by saying it's The Onion or it's real. Tom, go.
All right, let's get this music back. All right, Betty, your first headline. The Obamas sign an exclusive 6-truck deal to produce a series of mid-sized Dodge Ram pickups. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I think that's The Onion.
Very good, Betty. I'd buy that pickup.
That's funny. That is funny. Okay, next.
All right, next up. A woman plastic wraps her Florida home ahead of Hurricane Dorian. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, it's stupid enough to be The Onion.
Let's see.
Wait.
No.
Wait.
Yes.
That's real. A woman wrapped her house in plastic wrap?
Yes, it's coming to us from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, AJC.
That's a lot of plastic wrap.
Yeah. Hey, man, you got to do whatever it takes, I guess, man. Oh, that's crazy. All right, you're one for one, Betty.
All right, your next headline, Betty. Wrestler Chris Jericho has his All Elite Wrestling world title belt stolen while eating dinner at a Longhorn Steakhouse. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I think that was real.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Absolutely real.
Very real, Betty.
Absolutely
very good.
Real. I couldn't believe it when I read it. I couldn't believe it. I love Chris Jericho. I think Chris Jericho is fantastic. Yeah. And somebody stole his belt. I love that he ate in a Longhorn Steakhouse.
Where else? That's where champions
eat. I love that. I love that Chris Jericho. If you're at the Longhorn Steakhouse in Norwich, and then you look over, Chris Jericho's there with his belt. You're going to steal it?
I'd make a pass at it. Yeah. I'd go for it.
All right. Betty, all you need is one more, and you're another winner.
Okay.
All right, Betty. Your next headline. President Trump vows to eat all surplus pork products China refuses to import. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion. Even he couldn't eat that much.
Very good, Betty. You did it.
By the way, that's my favorite response we've had to any questions that we've had on this segment. Even he couldn't eat that much.
Wow.
Good job, Betty. You're a winner.
Thank you.
Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. Betty, hang on, okay?
Alrighty.
All right, hang on. Everybody's hanging on. Oak Park has two winners this morning. Even he couldn't eat that much.
Big day for Oak Park.
I'm sorry, but that cracked me up. That was funny. Oh, man. All right, 312-981-7200. If you want to join us via talk or text, I'm going to give you some weather in just a couple of minutes, and then we're going to wrap up the show and get back into jobs that no longer exist and some really, really, really crazy, weird jobs that no longer exist from the past. Let me read a couple of texts here. And if you want to jump in again, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 708 area code says, Nick, good show as always. You should know, are there still projectionists, or is it automated in movie theaters? It's totally automated. It's totally automated. It's a 16-year-old kid who's working at the popcorn stand, and you go, hey, something's wrong in the theater, and they go, all right.
I'll have you know, I was 23 when I was working there.
No, it's totally, there's not a projectionist in there anymore. And at one point, projectionists made the highest per hour wages, and they had one of the strongest, if not the strongest, unions anywhere. They made a lot of money. Projectionists back in the day, projectionists made a lot of money. They had to sit up in the room and they would do real changes, but everything is automated now. There's nobody in that booth. So if you're at a movie theater and you turn around and look up to see if there's somebody in the booth, there's nobody in the booth. There's a computer up there. There's like a laptop up there. That's what it is. Some 16-year-old kid goes upstairs, presses the button on the laptop, preview start, movie starts. But not like the old days, you know, when some projectionist who's making $45 an hour is up in the booth. So, yeah, totally automated. Doesn't exist anymore. There are some places that have projectionists. Like, for instance, obviously the Music Box has a projectionist because they show 70mm films. And sometimes they bring in projectionists at certain places if they have, like, a special thing. Like, the Music Box definitely has, they have people who are trained as projectionists at the Music Box because the Music Box shows actual film. I mean, they do digital as well, but they actually have 35mm projections and they also have 70mm projectors. So they need somebody to be able to operate it. But it's not like the old days when there were projectionists in every single booth in every single theater. So, all right, let's take a break and then we'll come back. And we've got some weather here and we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show and talk about more crazy jobs that don't exist anymore. 312-981-7200. Ah, yes. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And Tom, I believe I know who requested that.
Go ahead.
That would be my dad.
Correct, sir.
Yes, my dad requested that. I told him he should just watch Slapshot. because they play that song about 50 times in Slapshot. yeah, I mean, seriously, it's played multiple times in the movie Slapshot, which is fine because it's a cool movie and a good song. So there you go. That wraps up Wild Card Wednesday. My dad wanted to hear that, Maxine Nightingale. Coming up, we got Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We've been talking about some really, really weird jobs from the past that don't exist anymore. And also just jobs that that don't exist in general. They don't necessarily have to be weird, but they just don't exist. How about this? Powder monkey. Powder monkey. Powder monkeys existed long before child labor laws. If you were a young boy between the ages of 12 and 14 on a warship back in the seafaring days, your quick hands could be called upon to stuff gunpowder back into the cannons. Poor working class boys had no choice but to join these voyages, which were extremely dangerous. A cannon blast from an enemy ship could mean instant death or a sunken ship. Yeah, that's a really lovely term, too. A powder monkey. 12-year-old boy. Wow.
Just working with gunpowder.
Yeah. A powder monkey. Well, you learn something new every day.
Yeah. Not at all of it nice.
All right, how about this? Computer. Computer used to be everybody's title. Before electronics took over, these workers, usually women, would convert figures and crunch other numbers by hand. They literally computed. They worked in a variety of fields, including engineering at NASA, until they were replaced in offices by what we now know as computers, beginning as early as the 70s.
Yeah, that reminds me of...
Hidden Figures.
Yeah, they were computers.
Yep. Yeah, Hidden Figures. Boy, that was a good movie.
So good.
And it came out of nowhere.
It really did. It was like the feel-good movie of that.
And it was a hit.
Yeah.
And it garnered Oscar nominations, and it had a great cast, and it told a story that not a lot of people knew. I didn't know about it.
No.
I didn't know about it at all. And it got a thumbs up from Rod Pyle.
Yeah.
He said it was accurate, and it told a story that needed to be told that not a lot of people knew about.
You know, when it comes to space movies, I think I'm just going to call Rod. I'm just going to be like, all right.
Yeah, but he didn't like Interstellar, so.
Well, so he's got taste.
No, he doesn't, because Interstellar rules.
Do they have extraterrestrial bookshelves? Is that a real thing?
Yeah. It is real. How about a lector? Factory workers needed a little entertainment to distract them from their mindlessly repetitive tasks, so a lector would read news and literature aloud to them. According to Mashable, cigar factory workers would even pitch in portions of their weekly salary to fund their lectors. Some instances where a lector would be removed by the company led to thousands of workers going on strike. Wow. These lectors must have been pretty entertaining. I guess, yeah, if you're in a factory, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, it would be kind of nice to get a little news and a little entertainment for you.
Yeah. You know?
And now people just put their headphones on.
I mean, you're somewhat of a lector for folks.
I guess, yeah. Am I? I guess. That's what my job is. I'm an overnight lector. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
When I was 14, back in the late 40s, I worked as a young girl for F.W. Woolworth with a sack over my shoulder. They had about 32 registers in the store, two for each counter. I'd go around three times during the day, make sure that there wasn't large bills in the till. I take out that money and put it on a piece of paper, mark it down, and then I take it all, and made sure they had change. I take it back up to the office, count all the bills by hand, band them, count all the quarters and the dimes, and roll them in rolls. This was all done by hand.
Wow. Wow. Was there a title for the job?
No, but I got 75 cents an hour for it. That was wow. A lot of money.
That's a lot of money, 75 cents an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Elizabeth, thanks.
You're welcome.
Take care. Can you imagine walking around with all that money? Jeez. I just looked up at the screen, and it just says there's a picture of the couch from Friends, and it says the couch from Friends is going on tour.
Yeah, because it's 25 years this year.
So,
of Friends,
somebody's going to go look at a couch.
Probably
that goes on tour.
There's some wackos out there for Friends.
I did the first thing I did when I went in the Smithsonian. There are so many amazing things in the Smithsonian. We were like, "Where's Archie Bunker's chair?" We didn't care about anything else. We wanted to see Archie Bunker's chair and then Fonzie's jacket. Didn't care about any of the other stuff and all the other amazing stuff in the Smithsonian.
Didn't they have the ruby slippers as well from
I think so. Yeah. I just remember.
You're just like, show me Archie's chair.
I wanted Archie Bunker's chair. That was the first. I was like, we walked into the Smithsonian. This was during our baseball tour many, many, many years ago, and we had a day off in D.C., so we were in D.C. First thing we did before we went to the Smithsonian, we had our priorities. The first thing we did, we went to the Exorcist steps.
Naturally.
That's the in Georgetown. That was the first thing we did. We were like, well, I don't care about anything else. I don't care about the Capitol. I don't care about the White House. I don't care about the monuments. Don't care about the Smithsonian. We're going to the Exorcist steps first.
Gotta.
Yeah. All right. How about milkmen? Before everyone had refrigerators, it was difficult to keep milk from going bad, so you needed it delivered regularly by your milkman. Milkmen were ubiquitous in Britain, America, and other countries for much of the 20th century. They came almost every morning, left milk on the doorsteps, much like a paperboy would a newspaper. But with home free refrigeration, this profession all but disappeared. It still exists.
Yeah, you get the Oberweis guy.
Oberweis still delivers. It's not a completely regular thing. I remember our milkman. We used to keep the empties outside the back door in the enclosed porch when we lived over on Addison. And he would come out the back door and replace the bottles.
That's so wild to me.
Yeah.
There was one, I think there was like one house on our street that would get Oberweis delivered, and it just blew my mind. I was like, why do you get the milk to your front door?
Well,
because we can.
Because like, you can, and because like it's incredibly fresh,
it's
too.
Very good milk.
Yeah. It's really good. And you're talking to a guy who goes through a gallon in 6 days of like not Oberweis, but like Jewel milk. I drink a lot of milk.
Are you 2%?
No.
Whole?
Absolutely. I'm not going to drink dishwater. Skim milk is dishwater.
People like you, you must have a good metabolism because I can't drink whole milk. Otherwise, I'd be two sizes too big.
No, I can't drink the other stuff. If I have to drink like 2%, I'm like, ugh.
I drink skim.
No, that's dishwater.
Well, now I'm down to almond.
No. Yeah, don't call it almond milk. You're just going to make
almond juice.
Don't call it almond milk because you're going to make Orion mad.
Well, that's the last thing I want.
You can't milk an almond. All right, finally, groom of the stool. This occupation, oddly enough, may be one of the highest ranking ones on the list. The groom of the stool was an advisor to the English king, or to put it bluntly, he spoke to the king while the king sat on the toilet. There were dozens of these esteemed advisors throughout English history. With each passing groom, the position became more powerful until the groom of the stool was more than an advisor on fiscal policy, but a mere confidant in the commode. You ever see The Madness of King George?
Yeah.
I love that movie. I love that movie. We had a groom of the stool in that one. There was a lot of commode stuff in that movie, in the Madness of King George.
Heavy focus.
All right, so those are some jobs that you're probably glad you never had, and some of them don't exist anymore, and all of that stuff. All right, so listen, tomorrow, Dan Feinberg is going to join us. We got a lot of TV to talk about. It, Chapter 2, opens Friday, so we're going to talk about some facts about great horror movies that you might not know about, considering we got a big horror movie coming out this weekend, and much more. But, yeah, so that'll be coming up, and Triple Play Thursday.